It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
A little bit of the bubbly.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly.
Woo! I'm a one-man wrecking crew.
You know, as exciting a time as this is to be a wrestling fan, I read some depressing figures this week. WWE had less than 5,000 fans in attendance for Raw last Monday night in a building that can fit up to 21,000. They're also struggling, apparently, to fill the arena in Sacramento for Hell in a Cell next month. Meanwhile, Ring of Honor has only had around 150 tickets sold thereabout, maybe a little more by now, for its final battle show in December. Now, December is a few months away yet, but they moved Final Battle out of New York City this year. First time in years that they've moved that show out of New York, and they're moving Final Battle. And traditionally, Final Battle is their biggest show of the year. I've been to many Final Battles myself, a lot of them at the Hammerstein Ballroom, I think one or two of them at Terminal 5, which is kind of a dance club venue here in the city. And this year, they're taking it to their home base of Baltimore. So apparently they're not selling very well in Baltimore. Tickets went on sale a little over a week ago. 150 tickets sold in advance. Not good. And how about this for sad? The AAA show last Sunday from the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden. In more than one highly Hispanic market, this is according to The Observer, in more than one highly Hispanic market in this country, there were zero buys. Zero. Not statistically, you know, they got 0%, but 0% can mean 100 or something. Nope. Zero buys. Now, nationwide, on pay-per-view, outside of just those markets, the show is said to have done less than 60 buys. 6-0. That's just a failure of promotion, more than anything else. You know, a show with Cain Velasquez wrestling, I mean, he made his debut in August, but there's still the novelty factor there. This was only his second match. Big name in UFC coming in and doing pro wrestling for the first time. Cain Velasquez wrestling on that show at MSG. That should be doing more than 60 buys. You would think for curiosity, if nothing else. But I guess it doesn't really matter if you're out there giving interviews, promoting that the show would be streaming on Twitch, when in fact the show was never supposed to air on Twitch. Stuff like that probably doesn't help. So, as hot as wrestling feels right now at the moment, and we are about to head into this new period that is, I mean, there's some uncertainty as far as what's going to happen, what's going to be 6 months or a year from now, but if you're a wrestling fan, it's exciting, right? You're going to have different choices now and as many options as ever on TV, including some pretty prominent TV channels, so that's exciting. But as hot as it feels at the moment, because there is so much of it, I think we need to keep perspective on these things. Wrestling is only hot if people pay to go see it. But NXT sure felt hot this week. Full Sail, pretty sure Full Sail fits about 400 or somewhere between 400 and 500 people at any given moment. Even still, those 400 people were loud. At least for the first hour. They were very loud. I'll get into my full thoughts on the big NXT on USA debut later on. This is episode 618 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, September 22nd. 2019, I am the Solid Monster, one day away from the first day of autumn. Summer is about to be officially over. Fall usually brings, I think, the best weather of the year. I could do without those 90-degree heat waves. Fall typically brings the best weather. I actually love this time of year, so I am looking forward to that. Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Daniel Bryan, Chris Jericho, Jim Ross, they love fall too, but they also have books on Audible for you to listen to, and you can pick one up right now to get your free audiobook simply by using our link to sign up for a 30-day trial. That is from our friends at Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster and get yourself a free book right now. You can also become a PayPal VIP on the solomonster.com, right-hand side of the page. There'll be a little button that says PayPal on it. It's pretty self-explanatory. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Thank you here as we do roll call to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool, James Herrera, the Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Killshot, Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichert, Steven Handyman, Halastick, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel, Camelotes. I'm very happy to hear that Ian is on the mend and feeling better. Project Zero Mortals, Wayne Ashanti, Lightning Kevin Forte, who turns 35 years old today. So happy birthday to Kevin, all the way over in Barbados. Quick Draw, Benjamin Quesnel. We've got Josh the Shooter Stockton. Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solis. The Beer Snob would like to wish Too Sweet Sashi Sour a very happy birthday here on the Sound Off. And that's twofold from me as well. And the Sibling Psychos, Max the Axe Velado and the Bakersfield Brawler Kevin Velado. Holy shit, I cannot remember the last time that both brothers donated in the same week. This is amazing. It's almost like you get those special moons, those blood moons or whatever that come once every 400 years or something. It's amazing. And Max is the one who posted that little video message, by the way, on Facebook, and I put it on Twitter. Little video message from one Orange Cassidy. From the Battle of Los Angeles, Bola is taking place. Now, I never gave you permission, for the record, to post videos of me without my permission, so I'll give you a pass on this, though. You do it again, I'm going to boot your ass on out of there. You can't be posting videos of me like that. At least come to me first. Also want to say thank you to Huey Day Lewis, Albert JR12, and Declaridin. Thank you for the reviews on iTunes. Great North Wrestling comes to the Jean-Marc Lalonde Arena in Rockland, Ontario, Canada, Saturday, October 19th at 8 p.m. for GNW Apocalypse, featuring the reigning Hannibal TV heavyweight champion, the prodigy Nathan Banner, defending his title against the British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith Jr. Haku will also be in action, so everybody better be on their best behavior. He'll be taking on the Blood Hunter. And Savio Vega will also be making an appearance. You can get tickets at thehannibaltv.com. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed AB5, which is the state's gig worker bill, into law on Wednesday. This is a story I talked about last week. Now it has officially been signed into law. It would turn thousands of independent contractors in the state into company employees with certain protections and benefits that come with that. The new law takes effect officially on January 1st. Uber and Lyft have said that they're going to spend tens of millions of dollars to sponsor a ballot initiative in the state to overturn the law. Uber said it's going to fight in court to keep its drivers independent contractors. The law does not immediately turn independent contractors into employees on January 1st. Apparently, workers or labor enforcement agencies, they're going to have the chance to challenge the classification. So this may end up getting tied up in court for a while yet. Time will tell what effect, if any, it has on WWE, which is the context in which I mentioned this whole story last week, because there's been a lot said over the years about WWE classifying its employees as independent contractors and not employees. And now California has taken this step. How will this affect WWE? Will they run the state? Will they no longer run the state? I don't know what effect it would have in a company like PWG. I had a few people ask me about that. They're based out of California. How, if at all, would it affect them? I don't know that it would affect them much, if at all. Unless, you know, if you're talking, because they bring a lot of names in from out of the state, then it could potentially have an effect. But on PWG itself, I don't know. Because, you know, nobody, I don't believe anybody is really exclusive to PWG. You know, Excalibur is one of the founding fathers of PWG, and he's going to be sitting in the booth on TNT in less than 2 weeks. Big Cass, we talked about his incident last week backstage at the WrestlePro show the night that Pat Buck was having his big farewell. He is working now as a producer in WWE. It's supposed to be a very special night that was marred by Big Cass causing problems and causing a scene and being ejected from the building and taken to a hospital. He's clearly got issues that need to be addressed. And he has issued a statement earlier in the week. Enzo Amore posted this letter from Big Cass, saying, I have been very honest with my past struggles. It has been an ongoing battle. On Saturday night, I obviously let my demons get the better of me, and I ruined an important night for a really great guy. In an unfortunate series of events, I have worked incredibly hard to get to where I am, and even harder to overcome my ongoing battle with depression. But I will work my absolute hardest to right the wrongs of Saturday night, and I apologize to Kevin Matthews, Pat Buck, Joey Janela, and the entire WrestlePro locker room and all parties involved from the bottom of my heart. I'm getting the help I need from my family and friends as we speak, and will be getting professional help in the near future, and ask all to please respect my privacy in the meantime. When and if I reemerge as a public figure, it will be in good faith, and I hope to inspire those who struggle with the same mental health issues. I do, to seek the help they need. If Tyson Fury can do it, so can I. Remember, I ain't dead yet, and neither are you. Peace and love, signed William Patrick Morrissey III. Both Kevin Matthews and Pat Buck, who had issues backstage at that show, in fact, Pat Buck supposedly knocked him out. One right hook took him down. Now, they were involved in the incidents that night. And they wrote this. This is what KM wrote on Twitter. I'm all about second chances. The second that Kaz is good to go, I will be the first one to happily book him on a future WrestlePro show. Myself and the entire WrestlePro family are all behind you and wish you all the health and happiness in the entire world. Cannot wait to see the new and improved Kaz XL. Kick ass, buddy. Pat Buck added this. He says, rooting for you, Kaz. Us New York Jets fans can endure anything. Godspeed. Well, except for mono. It's too bad the Jets can't overcome that. Very classy responses, unlike mine, from the two of those guys. Now, that was very cool. That was very cool of them to tweet that out. It's nice to see them sticking together. You know what I mean? It's like one big fraternity. It's like one big family. Sometimes the family things get a little unruly, right? Brothers fight. So it seems like they're in his camp. They're rooting for him. And as I said last week, hopefully Kaz will do whatever he needs to do to get himself well. Because right now wrestling is far from the most important thing in this guy's life. The AEW television show now officially has a name, and unsurprisingly, because we've heard this name rumored for months now, and trademarks were taken out, so it didn't take a huge leap to figure out that they were interested in using the name Dynamite. Now, originally it was Tuesday Night Dynamite, and then maybe Wednesday Night Dynamite. Officially, the name of the show is All Elite Wrestling Dynamite. So if you don't get the play on words there, they're on a network called TNT. So they're going to have a show called Dynamite. Ha ha! There you go. I'm not even saying it's a bad name. I just, some people may not put two and two together as far as where the Dynamite name comes from. I just wanted to point that out. And it may also, I was thinking about this. It could also be a play off of the AC/DC song. TNT, which has the lyrics, I'm TNT, I'm Dynamite. And maybe it isn't, I'm just reading too much into it. But what's funny about that is that if it is a playoff of that AC/DC song, is that the official SmackDown song on Fox may also be an AC/DC song. During the little video graphic deal they aired for the Brock Lesnar-Kofi Kingston match, that's the song that was playing in the background. So that could very well be the new official theme for SmackDown. So a lot of love here for AC/DC in 2019. I still have love for AC/DC for the whole Highway to Hell theme for SummerSlam in 98, and that was over 20 years ago. I mean, how can you hate on AC/DC? The tag team title tournament bracket was revealed this past week to crown the first ever AEW Tag Team Champions. Tony Schiavone first revealed the bracket in the Control Center portion of the Road to TNT video series on YouTube. Love seeing Tony in that setting. It's awesome. And by the way, all this talk about, is Schiavone actually going to be doing commentary on the TNT show? He's been very coy about it, and supposedly he likes doing the producing and stuff like this, and didn't want to be in a position, he has said, where he boots anybody out of the booth. So it sounded like maybe they jumped the gun in that first press release when they announced that they had signed Schiavone to this new deal. where they kind of made it sound without saying directly like he was going to be in the booth alongside Jim Ross on Wednesday nights. Well, Tony Khan's been asked about this, and Cody has been asked about this, and the little hints that they've been dropping, there's no way that Schiavone won't be in that booth. I don't see how he will not be in that booth come October 2nd. I don't know if they do a deal like WCW used to do, and I suggested that WWE do this when Raw first went to 3 hours all those years ago, where the first 90 minutes or so you have one broadcast team, and then you switch it up for the second half of the show. Are they going to do something like that, where maybe the first hour is some combination of announcers, and then the next hour, Schiavone maybe? I don't know. I don't know what their mindset is as far as that goes. I don't know if that means Alex Marvez is officially off commentary and he's going to be doing backstage and YouTube stuff for them. I would have to assume Jim Ross and Excalibur are a given. Where does Golden Boy fall into this? Yeah, we'll see. That has not been officially announced. But with all of these little hints and everything, and I saw Cody in that video and talking about it, there's no way that Schiavone will not be alongside Jim Ross in some capacity on that show. And that's going to be interesting to see the kind of chemistry they have. I know they've worked together many, many years ago on shows like this, but you've got effectively two play-by-play announcers. Even if that's, you know, maybe Jim Ross is scaling back a little bit as far as the actual play-by-play is concerned, and he offers more analysis and more of his catchphrases and big calls and that sort of thing. But you've got two, you know, of the most prolific, is that maybe a good word to use, play-by-play announcers in wrestling history. Schiavone's been around for a long time. Jim Ross has been around forever. Them together working in the booth, maybe with Excalibur between them. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of chemistry they still have here in 2019. But anyway, back to the tag title tournament here. So we've got the Young Bucks taking on Private Party on week two of the Dynamite show on October 9th. We know that already. The Lucha Bros will also take on some action in this tournament. They're going to be taking on the team of the Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy in the first round, who are calling them officially now, calling themselves the Jurassic Express. That'll be on the October 16th episode, along with SCU taking on the best friends, Chucky T and Trent Beretta. The winner of that match will meet the Dark Order in the semifinal, since the Dark Order has already earned a bye in the tournament. Both semifinal matches will take place October 23rd, and the finals will take place on Wednesday, October 30th, on what I'm holding out hope, will be the Halloween episode of Dynamite on TNT. You can't have a Halloween episode and not send the guy in the dinosaur mask to the finals to win the entire thing. I mean, come on. I do have to say, the Jurassic Express sounds like a description of every old couple with a driver's license in the state of Florida, and some here in New York as well. There ought to be an age limit on those who can drive, right? If there's one thing I can't stand, worse than slow walkers, it's slow drivers. I'm living in the wrong state. For somebody who has as little patience as I do for slow walkers and slow drivers, New York has got to be the absolute worst place in the world for me to be living. And I've been here my whole life. It's no wonder I'm always so angry. But I think you get to a certain age and they just send a posse to your house to take your license away. Sorry, Grandma. Jurassic Express, they're my pick to win the titles. I have them going all the way to the finals to beat the Dark Order. I have it like this: Young Bucks over Private Party, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy over the Lucha Bros. Then they beat the Young Bucks, maybe with an assist from LAX. Best Friends over SCU to give us the match they first teased back at Double or Nothing when the Dark Order first arrived. Dark Order over the Best Friends. And then the Jurassic Express over the Dark Order in the finals. I mean, they're easily the most popular team they have at the moment. Young Bucks, obviously, in front of that crowd, they're like gods to these people. So they're over, and the Lucha Bros are over. But the Jurassic Express, you know, when they came out on that last show, it was amazing. You know, the reaction they got. Luchasaurus in particular, I mean, this guy's going to be a star well beyond this one team. But they are just the most overact in this company right now. And the Bucks are going to be fine. The Lucha Bros are going to be fine. LAX now is in there. You know, these guys, they're going to probably be multi-time tag team champions by the time all is said and done in this company. But I think for this tournament, it's got to be Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. Kenny Omega. Let's talk about Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega gave a video interview to Sports Kita, where he had some highly debatable things to say about the quote-unquote war between AEW and NXT on Wednesday nights. This is what he said. He said, "You can call it a war if you want. To me, we're in a completely different kind of business. It's hard to say that you're going to war with people that I call my friends. And yet, we are going to war. I'm going to war with these dudes that if we were on the same show together, the same promotion, let's pretend there were no borders, and there's just one big promotion. If these guys were on the same show as me, they'd be in the dark match. They'd be in the opening match of my main event match." And then he said this, he said, "You want to call it a war, you want to call that competition, go ahead. Maybe it's fun for you to do, that's cool, but we're different planets. And you're going to see that right away when you see 10,000 plus arenas sold out. You're going to see smiles on fans' faces. You're going to see real stars, not developmental talent, but real stars appearing on your television sets every week." I watched the interview, or that portion of it anyway, where he spoke on this and had the controversial responses. This is all part of his little mental breakdown that he has been having on being the Elite lately. Ever since he lost to Pac, he has been on this mental decline. He's not quite right. He's not quite himself. That's the storyline that they're doing with Kenny Omega. There's no way that he believes what he is saying. He's just trying to stir shit up. That was my first response. I feel the same way now that I felt days ago when I watched it with my own two eyes. He's trying to stir shit up. And it worked. But I think he's trying too hard. He's trying way too hard. This whole war angle, he's just trying too hard to create more of a war between the two sides. And he doesn't come off, obviously he doesn't come off well in this. He has been crucified this week for these comments and people pointing out how stupid it is. Yeah, and then I see the comparisons to Seth Rollins and people crying, "Double standard, double standard." Seth Rollins just came across like an asshole. Throwing around his bank account, you know, when he was going back and forth with Will Ospreay, and he even said as much, and he apologized for it, to his credit. He realized that he did not come across well at all, and I will take him at his word that he felt bad about that. They were having a friendly back and forth on social media, and then he threw the whole bank account dig in there, in this discussion about who the better wrestler is, and he regretted having done that. But he clearly felt very strongly that his company was the superior company. Those comments that he made in that respect were not comments being made to work any kind of an angle. He just felt that, you know, his company was being unfairly targeted and unfairly maligned and picked on by people, and he just snapped. He had enough, and he felt that he had to stand up for it. And, you know, he was probably under a lot of pressure. We've gone through this already, and it got me blocked for it, but we went through all this already as far as Seth Rollins is concerned. The comments that he made, the key point, though, is that I believe that Seth Rollins believes that he is the best and that WWE is the best. He's not just saying that for the sake of saying it. All the people comparing the Rollins stuff to this are missing the point. These were comments intended to get a reaction by Kenny Omega. He knew what he was doing, and it was done to get this gimmick over, whatever it is. I guess he's supposed to be delusional now. If we take his comments at face value, I can pick him apart all day long. You know, NXT has not been a developmental brand for a very long time now. For every Kona Reeves that we see on TV, we have a Keith Lee and a Cameron Grimes and a Dakota Kai, all of whom are far from developmental talents. They've been doing this a long time. Triple H has created his own indie brand. You know, AEW has its own share of talent that nobody beyond the hardcores would know. Nyla Rose, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, I'll throw myself in there. People flipping to TNT are not going to know who these people are, not right away. You know, Chris Jericho said as much. He was on Busted Open Radio recently. Maybe this was in the last couple months or so. This is their biggest star. This is their champion, the AEW champion. Went on the radio and said that outside of himself and Jon Moxley and Jim Ross, nobody is going to know who any of these people are. Cody, maybe, he said, but beyond that, nobody is probably even going to have heard of any of these people. And that includes Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman Page and LAX and all of these people. They need to take the time, he said, to educate people each week, one by one, each episode, week by week, who these people are and why you should care about them. And give them a reason. Give people a reason to care about them and want to tune in the next week and watch them again. You know, but the stuff about taking any NXT guy and putting him on the same show as me and they'd be in the dark match and I'd be in the main event, he's cutting a promo. I don't understand why some people, how do they not realize this? He's cutting a promo. You know, if you take it for what I think it is, it's his attempt to create a stir going into that first show. NXT stole all the buzz away from everybody in wrestling this past week, and they put on a great show. Talk about that later. And so now all eyes are going to be on AEW, and all eyes are going to be on this war on Wednesday nights, head-to-head between AEW and NXT. And all this war talk and everything, it's inevitable. They're head-to-head at the exact same time on the exact same night. You're going to have those comparisons. So people are both, it's not a war. I wish people would stop calling it a war. Well, you know what? It is. It's a war for eyeballs. NXT wants people to watch their show. AEW wants people to watch their show. And they can talk all they want about how everybody wins. The fans win. We're just here. You know, this is a great time for wrestling. All of that is true. All of that is true. But you know deep down, you know very well deep down, that they're looking at this as a war, as a competition between the two sides. One side doesn't want to be one-upped by the other. That's the worst thing that could happen. And competition is a good thing for you and me. Hopefully it'll drive both sides to put on the best show they possibly can, pull out all the stops, make it exciting, make it interesting. I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, these people that say, well, it's not a war. We're all friends here. It's just a friendly competition. Okay, sure. Talk to me in 4 weeks. Talk to me in 6 weeks. Friendly competition. So that's what Kenny is doing here. He's cutting a promo. He's creating a stir, trying to anyway. Maybe it's the wrong kind of stir, because, again, he doesn't come off very well in this. But it seemed pretty obvious to me watching it that he was playing up a gimmick and everybody's being worked on this. You know, Donovan Dijak, who's wrestling Keith Lee this Wednesday on NXT, he responded. He took the bait. He responded to Kenny Omega with this. He said, hey, Kenny, remember when my match with Keith Lee embarrassed yours on your PWG homecoming weekend at Bola in 2017? Tune in this Wednesday to NXT TV on USA so two developmental guys can show a real star how it is done again. You know, before I even knew what was going on the other day, I saw Kenny Omega's name trending on Twitter. And I thought he got injured or something and he was going to be off the first show. Turns out he was trending because of this. And because everybody was talking about Kenny Omega this week. Omega got exactly what he wanted. These people have worked themselves into a shoot, brother. And finally, MJF, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, got some heat this week from the D&D community after tweeting a gym selfie with the line, I don't play Dungeons & Dragons. He claimed that he got tons of death threats as a result, which I'm sure he didn't, but it's still funny to think that maybe he did. He did get bombarded by tweets, though, from people who do play D&D, who seem to be very offended, not realizing that he's a heel, saying heelish things. So kayfabe lives on with non-wrestling fans, at least. Actually, you know what? After this Kenny Omega reaction this week, it's clear that it lives on with wrestling fans, too. But I think it's brilliant. You know, my buddy messaged me on Facebook, shout out to Pete, to tell me that MJF, he's all over gaming Twitter. Is gaming Twitter, by the way, I've not heard of gaming Twitter before. Is gaming Twitter as toxic as wrestling Twitter? Is one more toxic than the other? I mean, it'd be hard to top the toxicity of wrestling Twitter. But maybe it is. I don't know. But he said that MJF's, he's been all over gaming Twitter and Reddit and RPG news websites. That's a couple of million people right there. And he said the audience for D&D alone is at an all-time high right now. And if even 1% of those people tune into AEW, he just added tens of thousands of new eyeballs to the product. Now, I doubt those people are going to suddenly become wrestling fans if they aren't already, but hey, it can never hurt to get new eyes on a new product. They need to have a segment, though. They have to have a segment on that first TNT show. Supposedly, they don't have writers. That's what Cody said early on. We're not going to have a team of writers. So I don't know how this is going to work in terms of skits and backstage segments and stuff. And maybe it's just a bunch of, you know, a bunch of them, all the VPs, all the executive VPs and Tony Khan sitting in a room just batting around ideas. But they have to have a series of segments on that first TNT show. Do it backstage throughout the night and just keep cutting back to it between matches with, you know, MJF. He has seen the light. MJF has seen the light and he wants to apologize to the D&D community, and he gathered up a bunch of plants who are supposedly D&D players to teach him and show him how to play. And as the show goes on, he's getting more and more into it, and the game is getting more intense and more involved. Until finally, he just wipes out the whole board. He ruins the game. Throws it against the wall or something. Calls them all nerds. Beats them up. Because he's a dick. And that's the kind of thing a dick would do. And you know, I used to play Dungeons & Dragons when I was a kid. In fact, I still have the game board. It's got to be in the closet somewhere. I remember I had a little velvet pouch with all of my dice to go with it. You had square dice, you had triangular dice, you had circular dice, Andrew Dice Clay. You had all these different types of dice. I mean, damned if I remember what the hell they were for. I mean, I vaguely remember spells and potions and clerics and shit. You know, which sounds like a great title for an idiot's guide to Dungeons and Dragons if I wanted to write that book. But I think, I'm pretty sure there's a handbook up there with it of how to play. Maybe I'll dig it out later. It's gotta be, 25 years since I last played, maybe a little more. I mean, I think it's been around since the 70s, so it's been around for a long time. But it's been a long time since I played. You know, when I started playing, a lot of parents would not let their kids play. It's kind of a big controversy at the time. They wouldn't let their kids play because they thought that the game was turning kids into Satan worshippers. They thought the game was satanic. They really did. They thought the game was satanic. They would not allow their kids to play. My parents didn't give a shit because, I mean, you know, they were cool. You know, they weren't uptight like other people's parents. And I turned out pretty well, I think, right? I don't worship the devil. I mean, I may be devilishly handsome, but that doesn't mean I worship the devil. Raw Monday night was live from the Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville, Tennessee. Twitter poll had over 2,700 votes. 58% thumbs up, 42% thumbs down. See, it's a lot easier to read these results now without that didn't watch option in there. I know some people want it back. I might bring it back at some point. It's on the whims of how I feel. I wanted to change it up again. Thumbs up, thumbs down, forces you to, you know, pick a side. And the people who don't vote, I mean, they could just vote to see the results, I guess. But hopefully you don't do that. And you can just tune into the show on Sundays, because I have the results every Sunday here on the podcast. So you can get the final results then. But it was 58 up, 42 down. So overall, people thought this was a thumbs up show. I thought Raw was a mixed bag on Monday. I loved the Fiend stuff. Everything they did with Bray Wyatt on the show, I loved. I thought the King of the Ring final was great between Corbin and Gable. And Cesaro had a fun match with Rey Mysterio. And that was about it. Michael Cole flat out said on this show that the wild card rule will be ending with the draft, which has now been officially announced. It is now confirmed for SmackDown on October 11. So that'll be the second SmackDown on Fox. And that will bleed into the Columbus Day episode of Raw on October 14th. So it is a dual date for the brand. You know, I mentioned The Fiend a moment ago. At the beginning of Raw Monday night, after the opening segment, and they went to the graphics to show the matches and stuff that was coming up later in the show, the graphics were upside down. to the point where Renee Young finally commented on it, and she said, have those been upside down the entire time? And the announcers didn't really respond, or it sounded like they didn't really know how to respond. But nothing like that on this show happens by accident. Everything is well mapped out. These things happen like that for a reason. Wasn't really, though, until the Wyatt stuff at the end of the show, with The Fiend and all the weird things and the effects on the screen and everything that was going on, where I realized, I said, wait a minute, okay. So the upside down stuff was done on purpose. It has to do with The Fiend. Either that or this is the weirdest crossover ever between WWE and Stranger Things. Cedric Alexander, another name that was talked about this week, and not for all the most positive reasons. Cedric was on Busted Open Radio with Mark Henry, and he described his push, the word that Cedric used to describe his recent push on TV, was scary. Well, after this week it sure is. It's kind of an appropriate word to use. He called it scary because of how unexpected it was. Came out of nowhere for him. He wasn't expecting it. The rumor this week, and I point out that that's all this is. The rumor this week is that Vince McMahon decided, it was a Vince McMahon call, to bury Cedric Alexander. For some unexplained reason. I love how these reports say that Vince wanted to bury him. They don't say why. Did he just get bored of him? Did Cedric, you know, curse him out in the hallway? No explanation for why this is happening. Just that Vince McMahon ordered, or decreed, that Cedric Alexander be buried. There's that word. I love that word, right? There's that word again. And so hence, we have the loss on the kickoff show last Sunday, right? And again the next night on Raw with the OC beating Cedric and the Viking Raiders. I don't buy it. I don't buy that Vince McMahon told Paul Heyman, or he told the writers, thou shall bury Cedric Alexander. Let alone that he would have used that word. That word gets thrown around way too much. Way too much. But they definitely cooled him off on purpose, and I'm not sure why. But there's a difference. The guy lost two matches. They cooled him off. When you use the word bury, it has a very different connotation. They're actively trying to suppress this guy's push, make him less over than he was before. They're trying to derail his push, derail his career. That's not what's going on here. But they did cool him off. You know, bumping his title match to the kickoff show, a place where I don't think AJ Styles has ever wrestled before. And then, after that, having AJ beat him clean in under 5 minutes, so they didn't even give them any time. That is proof enough that they intentionally cooled off Cedric Alexander this week. A burial, though, would be another 2, 3, 4 weeks of this, or even worse, not putting him on television at all. Because he's been getting more TV time on Raw than he has at any point in his career. Right? He went from 205 Live to showing up on Raw, but he wouldn't necessarily be on TV every week. Or he was kind of relegated to some of the with the lower card guys doing lower card angles and stuff. And then, around the time that Paul Heyman supposedly was, you know, kind of gaining more influence on the show as the executive director, all of a sudden Cedric is getting the biggest push of his career. It's not hard. You don't have to read a dirt sheet to put two and two together and see what's going on here. But then you see what happened this past week on Sunday and again on Monday, and it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe they're pumping the brakes a little bit here on the Cedric Alexander push. But again, I caution people to not believe everything that you read. And when you hear about, well, this guy, Vince McMahon's going to bury this guy and he's going to bury that guy, take a step back. And what you have to do, and it applies here in this situation as well, the story will be told over the next few weeks. You can't tell the story in 1 week that so-and-so is being buried. It's 1 week. It's literally two nights out of a given week. How in the world are people going to go there, declare all of a sudden that Cedric Alexander, after being pushed on television for a month or more, is now being buried? Right? Here's another proposition for you. It could just be a case where they plan to move him off of Raw. They got a draft coming up. Maybe the idea is that they're going to move Cedric Alexander off of the Raw brand and move him to SmackDown. So if he's leaving, and they know he's leaving, maybe he doesn't know it, but if he is being drafted away from Raw, maybe the idea is that, hey, well, we can beat him. Again, I wouldn't have beaten him so decisively, but maybe the idea is just, hey, we can beat him and we'll just use it as a way for AJ to get strong. And who cares? It doesn't hurt Cedric because in the end, he's going to go to SmackDown. It's going to be a fresh start. And we'll just push him on Fridays instead of on Mondays. That's why I wouldn't get too hung up on this whole notion that he's being buried. King of the Ring final, Chad Gable and Baron Corbin. I thought this was a very good match, which I expected it to be. I was very happy, if you've listened to this podcast over the last few weeks, you know, because I've made mention of this numerous times. I have been hoping for, you know, them to incorporate some of those spots into their King of the Ring match that they had used many years ago in that tag team match in NXT that they were both part of. And they did. We got a Chaos Theory rolling German to Corbin, which for somebody as small as Gable will never not be impressive, seeing him lift up big guys like that. We got that. And we got the tilt-a-whirl into an end-of-days finish. Not exactly the same finish as they used many years ago, but very similar and very impressive. And the cool thing about this match was that when it started, crowd was very quiet. They were very quiet. They were very lukewarm. It wasn't even overly exciting, but it built throughout the match as it went on. As the match went on, the crowd got more and more into it. Then they got into the near falls. They were chanting for Gable. They were rooting. They wanted so badly for Chad Gable to win this match. That, to me, is the hallmark. It is the sign of a great match. When you start slow and quiet and the crowd almost seems like they're not interested, but then you start doing things to get their attention. You start telling whatever story it is that you're telling in the ring, and all of a sudden, by the end, people are on their feet. People are on their feet. So I thought this was a very good match. I will give Baron Corbin a ton of credit. I thought he had a great tournament. I thought he looked great throughout the tournament. So did Gable. And I was happy to see Gable get this little mini push. The question now is it going to continue? And I could talk about that more when we get to SmackDown. They saved the coronation for SmackDown. So it was kind of weird because after Corbin won, he walks up to the throne and he just stares at it. And then they cut away, and it's like, huh, well, they've had this throne sitting on stage now for like a month, and Corbin has sat in it like two or three different times. Now he wins the tournament, and he's just going to stand there and stare at it. And then, as it turns out, they said later in the show that they're going to have the coronation for SmackDown the next night. Then we had on the, I guess the flip side of this really good King of the Ring final match that I very much enjoyed, we had Maria Kanellis throwing a gender reveal party backstage for her unborn child that may or may not belong to Mike Kanellis. The same Mike Kanellis who Corey Graves referred to on this show as a beta cuck. Or what was it, a beta male? Beta male cuck, he called him on this show. So all the lower card guys are in the back because they have nothing better to do, right? Beat sitting around and catering. So we'll go celebrate with Maria during this gender reveal party. And the Street Profits are there because, of course, they are. That's all they really are doing these days on Raw. They're narrating all of the stories behind the scenes, and they're cracking jokes, and they're being part of stupid segments like this. So the Street Profits are there, and they're hosting the party, and Maria shows up, and she reveals that the baby is a boy, baby blue, and everybody is celebrating, and Mike is so excited. And then Maria tempers those expectations and tempers all the happiness here that Mike is experiencing, and she says, Mike is not the father. Ricochet is the father. I forgot Ricochet was there as well. Ricochet was one of the few, I'd call him one of the top stars on the Raw brand. He was there as well. And this is news to him. He's looking around, he goes, whoa, wait a minute here. I ain't the father. It's not me. He denies it. So if you're Mike Kanellis, and let's say that your wife just revealed in front of the world, you're on live television, by the way, in front of all your colleagues and your friends and in front of I was going to say millions of people, but what is this, Raw from 20 years ago? She reveals that he is not the father. If you're Mike Kanellis, what is your first reaction? I mean, my first reaction is I realize that she's full of shit. But if you believe what she's saying, you go after Ricochet. You beat the piss out of this guy. How dare you? How dare you knock up my wife and have a little Ricochet baby? But no, what does he do? He's a professional wrestler through and through. He walks up to Ricochet. He says, I'll meet you in the ring. He goes to the ring because that's what anybody in that situation would do. So this was just a complete just waste of time until, you know, and I knocked the Street Profits and all the comedy stuff they have them doing. I just think it's so cringy. But I have to say, this might have been the best thing that the Street Profits have done since they have been called up to Monday Night Raw. The end of the segment, they're talking about what just happened. And they're talking about, you know, they're joking about a baby on a pole match. And Angelo Dawkins says, well, you know, Maria, maybe we could do Maria on a pole. And Montez Ford says, isn't that what got us into this situation in the first place? I couldn't believe they actually let that line slip through, or that they scripted it. I thought that was a great line. I thought that was fantastic. I popped huge for that line. The best thing that they've had Montez Ford do on this show since they got called up to the main roster, kind of. I say called up to the main roster. They haven't even wrestled a match yet. Can you really call it a call-up? Well, I guess I'll, for the purposes of this, we'll call it a call-up. I don't even know if you can really refer to it as that. So then, you know, this continued on, and we had Ricochet and Kanellis, and it went, you know, whatever, it went a minute, probably. Ricochet beat him. So then Maria, she comes out, and she's running down her husband, and she says, you know, she lied. Ricochet is not the father. She says that, I just said that to try to motivate you, and even that didn't work. What do I have to do? What does this woman have to do? She can find a new husband. There's one option. But she's talking about who the real father is, and all of a sudden, out comes Rusev. I was just talking about him last week. Haven't seen him in months. Lana was not with him, so I don't know where she is. But out comes Rusev. I guess given what was going on here in this segment, it would have been weird for Lana to do anything but come out and not go after Maria. And I guess you can't do that because she's pregnant, so they thought it would be better to just leave Lana at home. And Rusev comes out, he shaved the mustache now, he looks, he still looks like Zangief to me. But he comes off, and Mike is just begging for his life, and he tries to run away, and Rusev chases after him, and Rusev just beats the hell out of him. And this is when Corey Graves called him a beta cuck. Rusev being brought back the way that he was on this show, for this stupid angle, they had this guy drive, look at what they had him do. They did not want the surprise to be spoiled. Like it's some big surprise that Rusev is going to be on Raw. I mean, I like Rusev, but come on. I mean, they put people in buses and they hide them out. They did that with Sasha Banks a few weeks ago. That I can understand. But they went through the trouble of telling Rusev, we don't want people to know that you're going to be on the show. We don't want news to leak. We want you to drive. So he drove from his home in Nashville because he lives in Tennessee. I remember, you know, when him and Lana, I think, moved there, they said it was just easier. It's kind of in the middle of the country, and so it's just, for travel purposes, it's easier for them to live in Tennessee. So he drove from his home in Nashville to Knoxville, so he wouldn't be seen. Now, granted, by car, I looked it up, it looks like maybe, you know, with decent traffic, it looks like maybe a three-hour drive. It's nothing, I mean, for these guys, that's nothing. I wouldn't want to be stuck in a car for 3 hours, because I've been stuck in a car before for 12 hours, and it's not fun. These guys could do 3 hours probably with their eyes closed. I wouldn't advise that, but, you know, it's about a 3-hour drive. But they had him drive to Knoxville, then they hit him on a bus. You would think that he's Stone Cold Steve Austin or something. Just for him to come out and do this. This was their big idea. I would have loved to have seen Rusev's face when they pitched this idea to him. Or Lana. Would have loved to have seen her face too. You haven't been on television for months, so we're going to bring you back, and we're going to have Maria claim that you sired a Bulgarian baby with her. They're already teasing a Maury Povich appearance on Raw. They're teasing a paternity test. It's giving me flashbacks to Jerry Springer in the ring with the Bella Twins. I'd rather not go back to those days. Look, it's a variety show. They appeal to all different types of audiences. I get that. There are people who love this shit. I haven't checked to see what these what this video or these videos did on YouTube for whatever kind of barometer that is. You know, because I've already given up on society, I'm sure these videos probably have over 1 million views or 2 million views by now. So there's an audience for it. And maybe they do something that's actually funny, but usually when they do stuff like this, it comes off as so cringe. Like if this company had a history of doing real comedy and doing silly angles like this that had some kind of punchline that was actually funny, I don't think I would mind this nonsense so much. I'm still not a fan of it. But they're so hit or miss with these segments. But when you have 3 hours of TV to fill, this is what you do. And this is how you get people like Mike Kanellis on TV. Everyone's crapping on Mike and saying, oh, Mike, you know, Mike and Maria, they signed 5-year deals. This poor guy, and you know, he made his bed, now he's got to lay in it. I don't think he cares. You know, people are saying, making all these comments, but they knew what they were doing when they signed those contracts. I mean, as I recall, I don't even know that the company knew. I mean, they themselves may not have known. I don't think the company knew that she was pregnant again when they signed them to those new deals. So they got in when they could. They signed those contracts. Now she's pregnant. You know, she'll be on TV for a while until she can't be. And then she'll be off TV for a while. But Mike Kanellis could not buy himself airtime. If Mike Kanellis wanted to do a time buy and go to Vince McMahon and said, look, I'll pay you, like an infomercial, to buy a segment of airtime for myself on Raw, he couldn't even do that. And now he's on Monday Night Raw. Granted, he's being completely emasculated and completely embarrassed. You know, when you've got Corey Graves, of all people, dropping insults like that on commentary, it's a pretty sad day. But he's on TV. And he may get a segment now with Maury Povich out of it. Might be the most high-profile thing he does in his career in WWE. And Maria's a great character. Apparently Paul Heyman's a big fan of hers. That's why she's been getting so much TV time. It's not hard to see why. She plays her role fine. But, you know, my sympathy only extends so far to Kanellis because he's probably loving the shit out of this. Are you kidding me? He gets to be on Monday Night Raw every week? But, you know, what I kind of laugh at is, you know, for the longest time we heard these stories about how Vince McMahon is, you know, he's trying to change the image of the company. And he was never happy about the fact that all these blue chip brands and car companies and stuff would never want to advertise with wrestling. And he couldn't understand why. All the things the company does and all the charity they do and Make-A-Wish and everything else, why do these companies stay away from advertising with WWE? What's wrong? And then you see them, the Women's Revolution and women headlining WrestleMania for the first time, and they made such a big public spectacle out of that, and they've taken all these measures to try to change the culture of the company, and then you see segments like this. And it's no wonder that you've had advertisers over the years who don't want to have anything to do with wrestling. When you're getting in bed with Jerry Springer and Maury Povich, you can't be asking questions about, why does nobody want to advertise with us? How come no big sponsors want to advertise with us? I would say here's Exhibit A. This is more like Exhibit W at this point. These trashy type segments. What do you expect? What do you expect the reaction is going to be? If somebody was tuning into the show for the first time and didn't know any better, they would think they were watching fucking Steve Wilkos or something. Rey Mysterio and Cesaro, they had a very good match. Rey picked up the win, 619, Code Red for the victory. You know, just a good match, you know. Cesaro, anytime we get to see Cesaro in the ring for any length of time, it's usually going to be a pretty good segment. Not quite as good as the match he had with Dragunov at that NXT UK show, but I enjoyed it. We had AOP. We have the Authors of Pain making their first appearance on television in months. I know one of them was injured, but then they weren't. And they just have been waiting and taking their time to bring these guys back. So they have this vignette where they're sitting in a dark room and they're just talking about, you know, their imminent return. And I just thought the way they shot this and the way they did this, and they're both talking like regular human beings and they're speaking English and then they speak in their native language, I thought this was well done. I think if they can take this reintroduction seriously, that these guys could be players in the tag team division. But it's classic WWE. You have a team. You have an act like the Authors of Pain, where in NXT, they were treated almost like the NXT version of like LOD, right? They were just this, these two destroyers that would go in there. They didn't lose very often. They would just destroy everything in their path. And then they came to the main roster, and you would expect that to continue. And then they took their manager away from them. Everyone said, oh, well, maybe Paul Ellering doesn't want to travel. And then that was debunked. It had nothing to do with him not wanting to travel. That's not even true. They just took him out of the act. They removed him from the act. And then they became just another team. They did nothing with them. They were not made to feel special at all. Then one of them got hurt, and so they disappeared. You know what? Him getting hurt might have been the best thing. Because it was clear they had no plans for these guys, and they were on the fast track to nowhere. Now they get a fresh start. Now they have a chance to start over again. And if they're going to be on Raw, maybe Paul Heyman can exert some of that influence that he supposedly has, and he can actually do something with these guys. You know, they can be that sort of LOD type or demolition type team on the roster. They don't lose very often. And I mean, we're kind of getting that a little bit with the Viking Raiders to some extent. Maybe it'll build at some point to a big match between the two teams. AOP against the Viking Raiders, right? That could be fun down the road. But they break these guys down, so they have to build them back up again. And I never understood that. If you have an act that works, and they've had other examples of this over the years, and then they just beat them and beat them and break them down and break them down. Okay, they're not over anymore. We've separated the puzzle. Now let's put the puzzle pieces back together. And hopefully we can do it. Hopefully we can put all the pieces back together and we can make something out of these guys. I don't know why they do it, but I hope for AOP's sake that it works and they can actually get behind them this time. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross had a match with Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley and Sasha got the win. Becky Lynch came out when the match was over. They all had chairs. Charlotte came out. So they're continuing on with this. Sasha threw down the gauntlet to Becky for a rematch at Hell in a Cell. Becky came back and said, we'll do it. We'll do it inside Hell in a Cell. So not surprisingly, I figured it was going to end up in the cage anyway. It will be a Hell in a Cell match. I believe only the second women's Hell in a Cell in history. Sasha was part of the first one against Charlotte. Now she's going to challenge Becky for the championship. So that is official. That match is set. We had Rollins and Roode in the main event. It was Bobby Roode who pinned Seth Rollins at Clash of Champions to win the Raw Tag Team title. So now it's Rollins one-on-one with Bobby Roode here in the main event. You know, let me bring this up also. The 24-7 stuff throughout the show with Libertarian Kane, Mayor Jacobs in his home state, I didn't mind it. You know, he briefly won the 24-7 title from R-Truth. He lost it back to R-Truth. We know that Kane is not going to be back on television tomorrow night. We know he's not going to be back on television probably for a while. It's been a while since we've seen him. And in the end, when this show was over, he did his part to put over the hot new act on the brand. You know, and one of our listeners, Blake, even suggested that him attacking Kane, the Fiend, attacking Kane could be a storyline reason. It could be a storyline impetus for The Undertaker to cost The Fiend the championship at Hell in a Cell to lead to a match between the two of them at Survivor Series. I think it's unlikely, but he did float that to me in one of the mailbag questions as a possibility. This match here with Rollins and Roode ended in a DQ. Rollins then is being ganged up on. It's 5-on-1. You've got the Raw Tag Team Champions. You've got the OC. They're all taking turns beating him up. All of a sudden, Kane appears. Now he's in his gear. He's no longer Libertarian Kane. Now he's the Demon Kane. And he lumbers on down to the ring. He lays waste to everybody. He goes to set his pyro off. And all of a sudden, the Fiend appears. And he puts down Kane using the mandible claw. And then he stalks Rollins in the corner until they cut to the Firefly Funhouse intro. And they play it over and over and over and over again with all these weird effects. Like something they would use to torture enemy combatants in a locked room or something. It was creepy enough that I liked it. I liked everything they did on this show with Bray Wyatt. But the Fiend made his live event debut Friday night in Calgary in a match against Seth Rollins. He put Rollins in the mandible claw up against the ropes in the corner by the buckles. He did not break the hold by the count of five, and so he was disqualified. And at first, the fans thought that he had won the championship. And then when they realized that it was a DQ, they weren't so happy. After the match, Rollins gave him four curb stomps. Four curb stomps. And then he's standing over Wyatt's body, and Wyatt rises up, catches him again with the mandible claw, until the lights go out. When they come back on, the Fiend is gone. They won't be able to do a DQ finish like that at Hell in a Cell, so I sure hope they have something better than that up their sleeve. And then we have this story from WVLT-TV in Knoxville. Authorities in Tennessee say a man was arrested after police discovered he took a Snapchat video of an officer urinating in the bathroom. Tyler Bollinger is accused of recording the video at Thompson Bowling Arena during WWE Monday Night Raw. An arrest report states other individuals were also in the video, and a man and his son flagged down an officer to report what had happened. When police questioned Bollinger, they found the video in question. Bollinger also admitted to having several alcoholic beverages. Well, you don't say. You don't say. Gives new meaning to the term piss drunk. You know, when you hear a story like that, you expect a degree of privacy when you're in the men's room. God forbid you ever find yourself in the same situation as that police officer. That's all the more reason to be using Manscaped. Number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. It's precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. There's a segue for you. I mean, hey, you never know when you may get caught, right? You never know when you may get caught. Manscaped's Lawnmower 2.0 trimmer with skin-safe technology helps prevent any nicks and cuts to the most sensitive areas of your body. It's powered by a simple USB charge. You can even plug it right into your laptop, which you won't have to do very often because this thing carries a charge that lasts a good while. And it's quiet, so you can be discreet with it. They also offer the Crop Preserver, which is a deodorant and a moisturizer for your parts unknown. 85% of women surveyed think bad grooming is a major turnoff. 85%. So you can get 20%. That's a better percentage. Get 20% off and free shipping when you place your order on manscaped.com using the promo code SOLOMONSTER. Make sure you've got the right tools for the job. And all you men out there, take care of yourself like you would take care of your brand new car. All right? You wouldn't want to walk outside and see a nick or a scratch on the door. Why treat your car better than you treat your own body? So get 20% off and free shipping with the code SOLOMONSTER at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code SOLOMONSTER and keep your little monsters happy. SmackDown was live from the State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes, 71% thumbs up, 29% thumbs down, so a decidedly higher positive score for SmackDown than what Raw got this week. New Day beat Randy Orton in the Revival to open the show, and immediately after, Brock Lesnar's music hits unexpectedly. Again, even the people backstage didn't know that Lesnar and Heyman were going to be there. And out comes the Beast, along with the executive director of Monday Night Raw. Brock is back, and so is his MMA beard. I don't think I've seen him sporting a beard at all. I don't think, not much of one anyway, since his fight with Cain Velasquez. Now, who knows? One day the two of them may meet again, only this time it would be in a WWE ring. You know, WWE's been paying attention, I'm sure, to Cain's debut in AAA. They're said to be interested. They're watching him. They've got eyes on him. I would have to think if they have eyes on him, then they have eyes on a Lesnar-Cain Velasquez match, because they know that would probably do pretty big business for them. As long as Cain doesn't promote the show that it's going to be on Twitch, like he did with the AAA show last week. So they're in the ring, and Heyman tells Kofi Kingston, "Mr. Kingston, we hereby challenge you for the WWE Championship to a match." What Brock did to kind of deserve a championship match was not explained. I guess he's just Brock Lesnar. So it's just sort of implied that he deserves a championship match. And Kofi accepted, because Kofi has always said that he would be a fighting champion. Kofi apparently has memory loss, does not remember their last match together at the Beast in the East show in Japan 4 years ago, where he was absolutely obliterated by Brock Lesnar. I mean, when I say that he was obliterated, we've seen Brock Lesnar obliterate people before and beat them in short order and beat them quickly. And usually it's suplexes and an F5 and all that. But go back and watch the match he had with Kofi Kingston, their one and only singles match, and look at the way that he just would dump him on the back of his head, on the back of his neck, with those Germans. Kofi's got to have a neck like Gumby after that match. So apparently he just blocked that out of his mind, and he said, sure, I accept. And so just like that, we have a WWE Championship match that is now official for the first live SmackDown on Fox coming up on October 4th. No surprise there that Fox would want Brock Lesnar on their show. I still expect that he'll be drafted, officially drafted to SmackDown. When I did my little fantasy draft a couple of weeks ago, I think he was the first pick that I mentioned, and I saw him going from Raw to SmackDown. You know, he's done all he can do on Monday Night Raw. You've got a brand going to Fox. Fox, I'm sure, would want somebody like a Brock Lesnar, and they would probably want somebody like a Ronda Rousey, too, if she was still around. So the thing about this, though, so the match is going to be on SmackDown October 4th. They have a pay-per-view 48 hours later. So if Brock were to win the championship, and there are no automatic rematches anymore, does that mean that the title will not be defended at Hell in a Cell? And if the title is not defended at Hell in a Cell, it's not the end of the world. We already know the Universal title is headlining the show. They've already announced Sasha and Becky. We're going to have some big matches on that pay-per-view. If the WWE title does not get defended, it is a little lopsided. Why would one title be defended and not the other? But it doesn't have to be. So would they go down that road and not have it defended? Or do they do a non-finish on Fox to build, or some kind of controversial finish to build to a rematch 2 nights later at Hell in a Cell where Lesnar finally wins the championship? I honestly could see it go either way. I don't think Lesnar winning the title on October 4th is a foregone conclusion. I do think Lesnar winning the championship is a foregone conclusion, whether it happens on October 4th or whether it happens on October 6th. I think we're going to have a new WWE champion. And this is going to be Brock's first television match, his first match on weekly TV, Raw or SmackDown, since March 2nd of 2004, when he beat Hardcore Holly on SmackDown. And if you want to go back even farther, you want to find Brock's last match on Monday Night Raw. We came close in 2015. The night after WrestleMania 31, when Rollins cashed in Money in the Bank and stomped Brock's face into the mat, he came out on television the next night. His face was all cut up. He was dressed and ready for combat. They teased the match between him and Rollins, and they were about to ring the bell, and Rollins bailed, so the match never officially took place. That is as close as we have come to a weekly television match for Brock Lesnar on Monday Night Raw. The last time he wrestled on Raw, you'd have to go all the way back to July 22nd of 2002. That was his rookie year in WWE. This was a month before he even won his first championship from The Rock. He was in a Singapore cane match against Tommy Dreamer. Now think about this. He's been back with this company now for 7 years. He came back the night after WrestleMania 28. That was in 2012. So he has been back with this company over 7 years now, almost entirely on Monday Night Raw. And he has not wrestled a match on that show in 17 years. Which is what they're banking on, right? They're banking that his first match on TV will mean big numbers. And it's also a championship match. Plus, they're hyping appearances by a bunch of legends. I think it's the law of diminishing returns. I feel like we had a Raw reunion not too long ago, so how much of a draw is it going to be? You know, after a while, what does it really mean? Okay, we're going to have Goldberg is going to appear, and Stone Cold is going to appear, but they're not going to wrestle. And we've already seen them. So it is the law of diminishing returns, I feel. But we are going to get a bunch of legends, and Sting and Goldberg, I think they're all expected to be there. But that first show should do a big number. If they can't do a big number after weeks of hyping their debut and getting celebrities and athletes to promote it for them and bringing back names like Goldberg and Sting and all these you know, big wrestling names that even they're hoping some of the lapsed fans will recognize and want to tune in to see, and having Lesnar wrestle on TV for the championship, if they still can't pop a good number, like a big number, then this move back to Fridays is going to be quite the challenge for them going forward. I'll make a prediction now. I'm going to say that they do right around 3 million viewers. That's a million more than they have been doing. So I'm expecting that with all the hype, and maybe some new eyeballs tuning in as well, that they can find a million more people to watch SmackDown for that first show on October 4th. Because just because they're on Fox does not mean that they're going to pick up 3-4 million people. That's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Those people are not suddenly going to become professional wrestling fans. I think 3 million is being actually kind of optimistic, but I think that's a fair number. So I'll say right around, give or take, right around 3 million. Shane McMahon was served with papers on this show for a $25 million wrongful termination suit from Kevin Owens, who was shown sitting in the crowd. He bought a ticket to the show. There was no KO on NXT this week. There was a lot of speculation that he might show up in NXT. Hey, he still might, but he was not on that first show this week. 1 week. 1 week. He was fired 1 week ago. And he's right back on SmackDown the very next week. And you wonder why I rant about these things. You wonder why I shit on this whole fucking angle the week before. And people were like, oh, Solomon, it was a good angle. No, it's not. How many times have we seen firing angles in this company? Who could possibly take any of this seriously? Who could take it seriously? Shane McMahon goes on Twitter. This is a week after firing this guy. He goes on Twitter, he says, while considering a resolution to this ludicrous lawsuit, I will allow Kevin Owens to perform on WWE's upcoming tour of the Philippines, China, and Honolulu, Hawaii. So already backtracking. It's unbelievably, I can't even take credit because it's just so predictable. Anybody with half a brain could have seen this coming from a mile away. Shane fined him for attacking a referee, which Shane himself did last week when he attacked Kevin Owens. Shane did not get fined. He fired Owens. Right? And Owens' whole position is, look, I'm just doing what I was told. I'm just doing what I was told. It made him look so weak on television the week before when he was slow counting Chad Gable. He was doing the bidding of Shane McMahon. He looked like a puss on TV. And don't give me this family man bullshit. That's not how you get this guy over. He looked weak. He looked like a puss. And now the whole argument is, well, I did what Shane told me to do, and he fired me anyway, so now I'm going to sue you. Because those are the most exciting angles. I can't get through a year in wrestling without having at least one really good lawsuit angle to excite me. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but when I hear about lawyers and contracts, boy, I get goosebumps. You can't see it right now. The hair on my arms is standing up. I'm so excited. Hold on. Had a weird feeling just there. Almost got sexual. I just get very excited when I hear about these angles. Boy, I can't get through a year without getting one of these. This may be my favorite angle of the year. You know what? I hope they take it to the next level. I hope on television this week, we get a whole army of lawyers that come down to the ring and they spend 25 minutes telling Shane McMahon what he can and can't do and Kevin Owens threatening to sic more lawyers on him. Oh my God. Whew. You talk about great television. I can't wait. If sarcasm was a language, I would be fluent. End this stupid angle. They killed their own firing angle, and they're teasing another one now, because with this lawsuit, the papers also say that when and if Owens wins the suit, he gets to come back and fire Shane McMahon. Are you kidding me with this shit? They already killed one firing angle. They're already setting up a second one. And the lemmings will cheer because they don't know any better. Sasha Banks against Charlotte. Figure eight by Charlotte until Bayley makes the save for the DQ. good while it lasted. We've seen plenty of Sasha and Charlotte matches, not for a long time. It hasn't quite reached Randy Orton, John Cena levels yet. But this was good for the time it lasted. After the match was over, Carmella came out. She made the save. No friend of Charlotte's is Carmella, and inexplicably, she comes out to make the save. That made no sense. But Carmella, it looks like, is going to be part of this mix, and she might even be in line now to get the next shot at Bayley's championship, and we'll see how that goes. You know, Carmella is not looked upon as one of the sort of upper echelon of women. She's not part of that horsewomen clique. Carmella, when I think back on her career, has not had that one classic match that I could look back on and say, that night, that was the night that Carmella was made as a wrestler in the ring. Or, man, you know, Carmella's best match was against this person. Or Carmella's best match was on this show. I can't tell you what her best match was. I can do that with a lot of the other women and a lot of the other wrestlers in the roster. I cannot do that with Carmella. She has yet to have that one great match. She just hasn't had that. She's had success. She was the Money in the Bank stuff, and she was the champion. But point to me what her best match would be. Nothing stands out to me. So now she's going to match up next with Bayley. I guess we'll see. Maybe this is her opportunity to go out there and to have a match that people can actually remember and can look at and say, hey, you know what? That was pretty good. This woman's gotten a lot better. Because I haven't seen it. She's a great character. She's a great personality on the show. But I can't really say that I can point to any great piece of business that she's done or any great match that she's had on the main roster. So if they're going to give her a shot, maybe now she'll have a chance to have that match. We had the coronation of King Corbin. It was everything you would have expected. He came out, he had the robe on and the cape, the crown. He was acting like he was better than everybody. Chad Gable, he invited Chad Gable to come out, the man that he defeated in the finals of the tournament. He invited him out to make short jokes. So he said that Gable is a little upset about the results. And he said that it was awfully big of Gable to come out here. all the usual short shit that they've been doing with Gable to try to get sympathy on him. Gable had enough. So he attacked. He attacked Corbin. They landed on the throne. The throne was destroyed. Jerry Lawler on Twitter was distraught because he pointed out it was the same throne they used for his King's Court segments that they dust off twice a year. And so the throne was destroyed, and he was ripping up the cape, and Corbin was throwing a fit. He stomped on the crown. So it looks like this little feud between these two is going to continue. And they may have at least one more match. I don't know if it'll be on pay-per-view at Hell in a Cell or if they'll just do it on TV next week. Anything that keeps Gable on TV and keeps Gable in the mix. I for all the rumors that sprouted this week about Vince McMahon ordering Cedric Alexander to be buried, there were similar reports about how he's a big fan of Chad Gable. One of Gable's biggest supporters behind the scenes all of a sudden is Vince McMahon. Again, I caution people to just wait and see, because I have not seen any evidence of this yet. Just because he was in the King of the Ring and he made it to the finals does not mean anything to me. What will mean something to me is if Chad Gable stays on television, or if he gets drafted, if he stays in the mix, then that will show me that they finally realize, hey, we got something in this guy. Let's do something with him. It's going to take more than a week to convince me of this. But if it's true, that's great. Because the only person that matters behind the scenes and who you would want to be a fan in your corner is Vince McMahon. He's the only one that really matters at the end of the day. If he's not a fan of yours, you're dead to him. And it doesn't matter if Triple H likes you, and it doesn't matter if Paul Heyman likes you. If Vince McMahon doesn't like you, you're done. You're finished. You're not going to get any opportunities. So I hope, for Gable's sake, that that's the truth, and I hope we get to see more of him. And maybe he'll even get a win at some point. Maybe he'll get that win back over Corbin. They ended the show with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan came out to address the whole situation with Rowan and Roman Reigns. And I don't know if they're going to just turn him back babyface or not. It seems like that's the direction they're going in. Rowan did come out. He did come out to confront Bryan and talked about how I'm not a follower. I'm a leader. Bryan dared him to attack him, basically. He dared Rowan to do something because nothing you can do to me is going to be worse than you stabbing me in the back and lying to me and betraying me. Luke Harper attacked. Roman Reigns came out, Superman punches, Harper cut him off. They powerbombed Roman Reigns into the post. They pulled up the mats outside the ring. Just chaos here to end this show. And it ended with Harper and Rowan clearing off the announce table, picking up Daniel Bryan, and slamming him through the announce table. So Roman is laid out and Bryan is laid out. Harper and Rowan stand tall. It's pretty clear that they're setting up for a tag team match. I would have to think they save it for the pay-per-view and they don't just blow it on TV. And it's going to be Daniel Bryan, probably, maybe his reluctant partners with Roman Reigns, taking on Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. This has Halloween Havoc 1995 written all over it. This is Sting and Flair and the Horsemen, to me, all over again. Because you're going to have a situation where Roman is not completely trusting of Daniel Bryan. But he says, all right, you want to team with me? Or let's team together. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. And we're going to go and we don't have to be friends, but we'll take out Rowan and we'll take out Harper for what they did to us. Or maybe it's Bryan who has to do the convincing. And finally, Roman relents and says, fine, I'll be your partner. And then comes Hell in a Cell and they're doing the match and Roman's doing all the work and Bryan's on the apron. He's not tagging in. He's trying to get the tag. And finally, the hot tag comes. And that's when Bryan turns on Roman Reigns. And we find out what I still believe. I'm going to die on this hill. I still think that Bryan is not going to be babyface. This is like the Stone Cold Summer of 2001 babyface turn. Where he came out at the end of that one Raw show before the Invasion pay-per-view. And he cleaned house and everybody was cheering. And he's going to lead Team WWF. And then you get to the Invasion pay-per-view. And what happens? Austin betrays Team WWF. And he helps the Alliance win, and then he becomes the leader of the Alliance. I think we may be in for a similar thing here with Daniel Bryan. I am not convinced that this guy is just going to, or that he should, just go back all of a sudden to doing yes chants and being a babyface again. I don't think I'm ready for that. I think it's too soon. So I still think he's going to be revealed as the mastermind behind this entire thing, and that's when we get the feud and the matches between Bryan and Roman Reigns.
Let me remind you, and I think a lot of people here will agree, NXT is way better than the WWE.
NXT made its live debut on USA Network Wednesday night, and by all measures, it was a big success. They had a hot crowd at Full Sail, some really good matches. And they did a little bit better than I thought they would when the ratings came in. 1.179 million viewers. Overnight viewers, so maybe a little higher by now. I don't know what USA's expectations were. I know their Suits show, which is, I think, coming to an end, averages just under a million viewers each week. But I would think everybody has to be happy with that number. And AEW is going to have a tough time topping that, I think. Not that they can't. Until they actually debut, we really don't have any idea what interest level there is in a weekly television show for AEW. I think wrestling fans are excited, by and large. Are they excited enough to the tune of over 1.1 million viewers? That I don't know. You know, they may come close. I mean, look, I've been predicting 500,000 for months now for that first AEW show. Maybe I'm just playing it safe. But, you know, whereas 500,000 would have been a disappointment for NXT, I think 500K would be a number for AEW to build off of and to grow. You know, but if NXT does a similar number this week as it did last week, the pressure is going to be on AEW to pull a similar number. And if they don't, you know that the discussion, rightly or wrongly, the discussion is going to be kind of negative. But I think it's very different starting a new show from scratch. NXT has been an established brand. You could say it has a niche audience. That's true. But NXT's been around now for what, 5 years? 6 years? This is not their first rodeo. This is still a new brand. AEW's had some big shows, but they have not had weekly television. This is a brand new company. This is a brand new promotion. It's a very different situation. And also remember, those million plus were for a 1 hour show. We don't know how many people switched over to the WWE Network. Had they gone 2 hours on USA, it's entirely possible that that drags the number down and they don't do a million overall. Maybe the first hour does a million and the second hour does, you know, 700,000. So we'll find out in a few weeks, because they're doing this one more time, and then they go 2 hours on USA starting October 2nd. But for this week, it has to be seen as a very good number for NXT, even excellent. An excellent number for NXT. Speaking of the network, I was one of the many who had issues logging on for that second hour to the point where I just gave up. I threw my hands up in the air, I said no mas, and I watched it the next day instead, which is probably what I'm going to wind up doing anyway. Once AEW starts, especially if I do, any kind of live streaming on YouTube for the AEW show on Wednesdays, which I'm leaning towards doing right now. I heard that WWE sent emails to network subscribers apologizing about what happened and not being able to access the network. I never got any email. I've been a network subscriber since day one in 2014. I've been a loyal subscriber to the network. Pay my $9.99 every month like a jabron. I keep hearing about people getting free months. I'm sitting here paying $9.99 a month, which I still think is a steal. I never got an email. Where's my email? Hey, WWE, where's my apology? What am I, chopped liver? Show overall I thought was really good. That first hour was the better hour of the two. Really, the only bad thing I thought on the show was the match between Xia Li and Aaliyah during the second hour, which barely went 2 minutes anyway. It was just more of a showcase for Xia Li, but they looked rough. Towards the end, they looked rough in there together. I like Xia Li. She's got a lot of promise, but you know, she slipped. She's trying to do a move off the top, and she slipped. And look, shit happens, right? People slip. So she slipped. But it felt like after that, it's almost like maybe it was Aaliyah. She looked kind of confused. She didn't know what to do, and they did a whole series of moves, and it just looked bad. This match just fell apart at that point. Thankfully, this match did not air on USA. Opening their first live show on USA with the ladies, I feel like years ago would have been considered this bold move. And it's funny, you know, today, no one that I saw anyway really thought anything of it, which I think is a testament to how things have really changed. And I thought the women killed it. I thought it was the best match on the entire show. I like this match even more than Roddy and Velveteen Dream. It was Mia Yim, Bianca Belair, Io Shirai, and Candice LeRae, with the winner challenging Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's Championship on October 2nd. Io was up top, ready to show Charlotte Flair how to hit a proper moonsault where you don't land on your feet. When Mia Yim shoved her off the top rope onto Bianca Belair, who was standing down on the floor. So now the two of them are wiped out. Candice hits Mia with a reverse Rana, spiked her right on her head, hit the Quebrada, and picked up the win. And what did I say 2 weeks ago? What did I say 2 weeks ago on the podcast? Io Shirai wins this if it stays a three-way, which is what it was originally announced as being. And Candice then costs her the championship on October 2nd. Unless William Regal adds Candice to the match, in which case Candice would be my pick to win. And that's exactly what happened. Now the question is, who wins between Candice and Shayna? Do they change the title? Or does Io cost her the match? I don't think Candice wins yet. I don't think Candice wins yet. I actually think there's a better chance of Brock Lesnar winning the championship from Kofi Kingston, which he's going to anyway. But the question is, does he do it on SmackDown or do they rematch 2 days later at Hell in a Cell? I think there's a better chance of Brock winning the title October 4th than of Shayna winning the championship October 2nd. I think Io gets involved, and it leads to a triple threat match on the next TakeOver show, whenever that is. I feel like, you know, they just moved to USA. Maybe they'll get some new viewers out of it for NXT. Shayna is the resident badass. You know, she is what Asuka used to be in that women's division. Why take the title off her right away? Unless she's being drafted to Raw or SmackDown, and we still don't know for sure if NXT is even going to be part of the draft next month. Triple H seemed to indicate in an interview recently that NXT may not be. You know, he was kind of being coy. I mean, he didn't give a straight answer, but it sort of felt like, as of now, as far as he knew, NXT was not going to be part of the draft, but of course that could change from one day to the next. If they're not, and Shane is not going anywhere, then I see her keeping the title. If they are going to be drafted, if she is going to be drafted, that changes things. Because I could see Shayna dropping the title and being drafted away the following week. Then you could do Candice and Io for the championship at the next TakeOver show. and give Candice a very short run, like Johnny Gargano had with his NXT title the first time. And maybe in her first defense at the next TakeOver show, she drops it to Io, and we get heel, you know, with Shayna off to Raw or SmackDown, we get heel Io Shirai now to kind of dominate the women's division for a while. So there's a few different possibilities here, but that's kind of how I see it playing out. But if there are no NXT picks in this draft, I'm gonna stick with my prediction. Say that Shayna keeps it.
We use the word revolution because this is a revolution!
Wednesday, October 2nd will be a night to remember for wrestling fans with the debut of All Elite Wrestling on TNT.
We're going to change the world of professional wrestling as you know it.
Made for wrestling fans by the wrestlers themselves, AEW flies higher.
Takes to the skies!
Hits harder.
Oh, gosh!
Oh, my God, brother!
And pulls no punches. With a roster including AEW champion Chris Jericho.
A little bit of the bubbly.
The Young Bucks, Jon Moxley.
This is what you call a paradigm shift.
Cody and Brandi Rhodes, the Lucha Bros, Nyla Rose, Britt Baker, and more.
How do you like AEW now?
A new league rises. All Elite Wrestling Dynamite, Wednesday, October 2nd at 8, 7 Central on TNT. Velveteen Dream and Roderick Strong for the North American title. Another really good match. I like the false finish where Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly tried to interfere after the ref bump. Dream fought them all off. He turned around right into the end of Heartache, only to kick out at two. See, that's the kind of believable false finish I like. Not when they overdo it, but there's a place for it, and they had me. They had me. I thought that might be it. Dream Valley Driver. Dream goes up top for the Purple Rainmaker, but Adam Cole super kicks him in the head. He falls off. Second end of Heartache, and Roderick Strong is your North American champion. The Undisputed Era is now draped in gold. They had to. They had to end with something memorable for that first big show. It was the right time. It was the right place, I think, to do the title change, and now Dream can chase to get it back. Dream Chaser. See? It just writes it. It writes itself. Now, they could go a different way with it. I was thinking about this, too. And actually, this is what I would do. This is what I would do. Dream had a run with the North American title, and it was fine. And he had some really good matches as the champion, too. And he still, you can tell, he still has a lot of inexperience. But each time I see him in the ring, he looks more than capable. And he gets a little bit better each time. So he had his run with the North American title, with the maroon belt. Okay? Now, what they can do is they're doing a worked injury with Velveteen Dream, where his back is all messed up from the backbreakers and everything in the match. And he's not cleared to compete. He's not medically cleared to compete. Maybe they keep him off television for a few weeks. Have Killian Dane or Matt Riddle, probably Riddle, challenge Adam Cole next for the championship. Which, that's the current plan. It's either going to be Riddle or Dane. Ordain, that's actually a word. But they're going to have a match this week to determine a number one contender. Assuming they don't win, which I don't believe they will, Dream comes back and he chases Adam Cole for the NXT championship instead. Cole's the one who kicked him in the head and cost him the North American title. It would only make sense for him to seek revenge on Adam Cole, not on Roderick Strong. So that's what I would do. And I'm a Matt Riddle fan, but I would be okay with having Dream challenging Cole for the main title and having Riddle going after Roddy next. And they had a match at TakeOver a few months ago that was actually really good. I certainly would not argue against the Matt Riddle-Roderick Strong feud for the North American title. Hour 2 on the network opened with Pete Dunne beating Arturo Huas with the finger break spot. I saw Huas recently on the Evolve show. They sent him and a few other developmental. Him and a few other people from the PC, they have sent over to Evolve. Evolve, in some ways, has become the new NXT. It is now an unabashed feeder system for NXT. I think they even said, they said as much on the Evolve show that I watched a few weeks ago. At the very beginning, it might have been the ring announcer or the lead play-by-play guy, I forget who. Some kind of mention of the fact that they are sort of, I forgot the terminology they use, but kind of like almost like the farm system now for NXT. So they've sent, Huas is one of the people they've sent there. And again, he's getting better each time I see him. He's got a fighting, I think a judo background. But he's very believable in the ring, and he's obviously like a submission guy, and he's fine, but this was a showcase not for him. This was a showcase for Pete Dunne. Then we had Denzel Washington. I want to make sure I say this right. Denzel DeJournette, I believe is his name. I was going to say DiGiorno. Now I'm going to think of pizza every time I see this guy. He was an All-American at Appalachian State last year. Then he moved to Orlando to join the Performance Center. This is our first time seeing him on TV, and we didn't get to see much. He was scheduled to wrestle Kushida when Imperium showed up. They attacked from NXT UK. It was Fabian Aichner, Marcel Bartel, and Alexander Wolf, all minus Walter. The crowd chanted Walter's name. They wanted Walter. Ask and you shall receive. As soon as they hit Walter's music, the place went wild. He came out. Kushida comes out. He attacks the other members of Imperium. Walter grabs him. Kushida slips away. So we're going to get Walter against Kushida. I don't know when. I don't know where. If it'll be in NXT. If it's going to be NXT UK. But we're going to get Walter and Kushida. And that will be awesome. So I like the mix. You know, when I'm watching this, like that last segment, I like the mix of talent that they had on this first show. And I think they need to do this going forward. You want to make 2 hours of NXT work every single week. You got to have a good mix of talent. We had stars on this show from NXT, NXT UK, and 205 Live. It's great to have that mix. It's great to have access to all of those different rosters. Case in point, we had a number one contenders match for the Cruiserweight title between Oney Lorcan and the returning Leo Rush. I listened to Leo's music. I know he does some music. I listened to his new single a few weeks ago. He came out with a music video for this song called I Wonder. And it's actually pretty good. It's not bad at all. I was starting to think that he was just going to change careers. You know, after he went public with those comments with that Fightful.com interview all those months ago by WWE, and he felt he wasn't being paid fairly and he has to support his family and all this stuff, I thought, and they took him off the road. They took him away from Bobby Lashley. They took him off the road after that. And I thought that was going to be the end of him. So it was a surprise to see him here. Mauro Ranallo said that Leo had more issues than a magazine. Oh, Mauro. He looked great. Frog splash off the top rope for the win. So Leo Rush will challenge Drew Gulak in between Walter and Kushida. And now Rush and Gulak. I like the direction that things are going, I have to say. And you know, when I talk about not being sure if Leo would ever come back, Luke Harper and Rusev fit into that same category. And all three of them came back on television in the same week, within days of each other. Luke Harper, Rusev, and Leo Rush are all back on TV. Matt Riddle and Killian Dane, they were scheduled to have a street fight, spilled outside the building by the production trucks. And there's Imperium with Walter. They're sitting at a table. Looked like they were out there playing cards. Maybe they were. It just seemed very random to me. They're just sitting at a table outside between all, in like the parking lot between all these production trucks. Walter attacks Riddle. The Street Profits showed up to make the save. Forgotten Sons joined in. Soon, almost the entire roster now is fighting. Pete Dunne was in there. It's a giant melee, as Vince McMahon used to say. Announcer Vince. Announcer Vince used to call it a melee. There were a lot of Vince McMahon, like, isms back when he was an announcer from the announcer days. And I sometimes find it slipping into my own vocabulary. Like, sometimes unwittingly, I don't even realize it, but, like, there were certain words he would always use back then. Like, one of them, like, notwithstanding. I would always hear him using that word, whether it was on commentary or in other ways. Notwithstanding was always, like, a favorite word of his. And there was another one as well, and I would hear him use it, like, if the heels did something. Oh, God, what was that word? Duplicitous. I never even knew what that word meant until I heard Vince McMahon use it for the first time. So every now and then, those words will slip into my own vernacular. I don't even realize it. I'm sure you guys could think of a whole bunch of different ones that I'm not remembering. I mean, obviously, there's like, what a maneuver, and, you know, anything can happen in the WWF. Those are more like, not catchphrases, but I guess you can call those Vince-isms as well. But I'm talking like specific words that he loves to use. Notwithstanding was always one, and duplicitous was another one. So the brawl spills back into the building at Full Sail, back down to the ring. Officials are separating them. The fans are not happy, and neither was I, because they're in the middle of a street fight. What the hell are you doing? There's no rules in a street fight. What are you breaking them up for? But I have to say, this brawl was great. I thought, as brawls go, this was actually really well done. It was chaotic. It felt like mass carnage. It kind of reminded me of, remember that big angle that Impact did a number of years ago? It was like the whole show or something, or the first half of the show, and they had to call the cops to the building. It was this just giant, it was almost like anarchy. It was like a prison riot. And I thought that was kind of well done. This was also very well done. This basically, you know what this was? This was the way that Nitro used to go off the air every single week, except back then it was the NWO and it was Sting. And I mean, we're talking about stars on a whole other level than what we have here in NXT. But in the NXT world, I thought that this was very well done. This Wednesday, it's going to be Keith Lee against Dominic Dijakovic, who I'm sure will be hoping that Kenny Omega watches his match. So we get to see Lee and Dijakovic one more time. Dakota Kai is going to make her in-ring return to NXT. And Matt Riddle, one more time, is going to face off in a street fight against Killian Dane, with the winner getting the shot at Adam Cole's NXT Championship. They did not say when. I would think October 2nd would be as good a guess as any. My main takeaway from this NXT show is that Triple H is not playing around. He's not playing games. This was a strong first effort on TV. They're loading up that October 2nd show, and he's got access to four rosters other than his own, other than his core NXT roster, if he wants to use it, if he wants to tap into it, if he can convince Vince McMahon to let him. He's got access to up to four different rosters: Raw, SmackDown, NXT UK, and 205 Live. So AEW is going to need to bring its A game right out of the gate if they want to compete. This week's RSPW Rewind takes us back to 1995, when keyword WWF on AOL was the coolest thing to a young wrestling fan, and I would sit there waiting 30 seconds for one photo of Sonny to finish pixelating. Little did I know there was this whole other community out there in RSPW talking wrestling, and one of the things they were talking about was the debut of a new character on WWF television called Goldust. And as you might expect, this brought out a good amount of gay bashing, which I'm going through some of these posts. And look, you go to any part of the internet and you're always going to have that element of people, you know, people who say horrible things and are probably horrible people. But I'm going through some of these comments, and it's just, you know, pretty repulsive stuff and not funny at all. And then there were comments about Vince McMahon losing his mind and doing it just to embarrass Dusty Rhodes. That's why he's doing this. That's why he came up with this concept. But there was also a decent amount of support for the character as well. So the time it takes me not only to research these posts, but to then correct all of the spelling errors to make them readable on the show, you could watch two full episodes of Raw every week, which I would not ask you to do. But I do it out of love, and this week was no exception. I had fun putting this together. We begin with this post from TC Cannon on July 23rd, 1995, right after the first Goldust vignette had aired on television. Title of the post is, "Gee, wonder who Goldust is." Says, "This one isn't going to take a genius to figure out. At least they aren't making Dusty's pup take on a super lame name like Rad Radford or Waylon Mercy. I do wonder exactly what the gimmick will be, though. Any ideas?" Steve responds, "It's only natural." And he put "natural" in quote marks. I wonder if Steve patted himself on the back for that one. Maybe he patted himself on the back so hard he burped himself. He says his father was Stardust, and he is Goldust. So a very astute observation by Steve. And in fact, long before Cody was playing Goldust, or Stardust rather, on TV, Dusty Rhodes would call himself Stardust many years ago. TC Cannon returned a few weeks later on August 14th. Headline is Unbelievable, Goldust is Born. Says, I bet most of you RSPWers think that little Dustin looks like a fool and acts like a bigger one with the wig and the paint. But this gimmick, if done right, could be worked incredibly well. Dustin can work, and if they put a lot of time into his push and keep him evil and not comical, Dustin could be the next great heel. The next day, though, Pat Savino, he chimed in to raid on TC Cannon's parade. He says, yeah, I can't wait until he feuds with Alundra Blaze for the women's title. Hardy har har. August 15th, R. Bowman has this to say. I can't believe that so many people are getting so bent out of shape by Dustin's new gimmick. I think it's great, and it's going to draw major heat. I'll admit that when I first saw it, I was shocked, and after watching wrestling for 25-plus years, it takes a lot to shock me. Upon first seeing Goldust, I thought it was so stupid. Then Dustin started to talk. He comes across as this depraved glitter boy who just crawled out of the Mondo Bizarre underbelly of the L.A. club scene. I've not read a description like that before, but that's, there you go. Well, I guess that's one interpretation of it. Does the name Ziggy Stardust ring any bells? I have to give a huge amount of credit to Dustin to have the balls to go through with this gimmick and have the talent behind the mic to pull it off. I think they are walking a fine line with this and cannot let it get out of control. Goldust can't get too effeminate or he will lose his edge. This is a perfect gimmick for the 90s. Both the marks will hate him. And judging from the responses here, a large number of the smart fans will also. I think Vince has been right on the mark with a few of the latest gimmicks he's introduced. Dean Douglas is coming along nicely. Well, who wants to be the one to tell him? Waylon Mercy has become an interesting performer, and now Goldust. I think people are missing the point on some of these gimmicks. They require a bit more thought to appreciate them than the standard WWF gimmicks. Let's face it, a hog farmer, Goldust ain't. Give Goldust some time and think about what they are trying to accomplish with the character. Anyway, if you still hate him and want him to get his teeth handed to him, I guess the gimmick did what it was supposed to do. Big thumbs up, Dustin. You nailed it. So that's a big endorsement for Dustin Rhodes and the Goldust gimmick. Carl and Nancy McCaskey respond. This is Carl, or as Rick Grimes would say, Coral. Coral. Only Walking Dead fans will get that reference. Does the name Exotic Adrian Street ring any bells to you? Dustin's going to have to work very hard to surpass Street's performances. Come to think of it, Street and Dusty Rhodes worked together for many years, so Dustin might be drawing upon Street's angles of the 70s and 80s. On Dustin having the talent to pull this off, he also needs a whole lot of super glue to keep that wig from falling off. And hey, maybe that's going to be part of a future angle. So this was obviously before Goldust actually debuted in the ring, because from the first match, he took the wig off. People thought he might actually wrestle with the wig on. It's like The Fiend, right? I didn't know if The Fiend was going to keep the mask on or not, and then I saw that he was keeping the mask on. Sometimes you just don't know. Yo Mama responds to Carl's joke about the wig falling off. He says, great, then the WWF would be recycling old Ricky Lake angles. Anthony says they did it on Melrose last season. See, I know I'm in a thread from 1995 when I get a Yo Mama reference and I get references to Ricky Lake and Melrose Place. Also on August 15th, things took a bit of a darker turn with Bill Hackett, who felt the need to start a thread calling Goldust a homophobic slur that I shall not repeat, and asking people to post their response. Basically, this was the earliest version of Look at Me, an attention-seeking whore, here on RSPW. So the Masked Cruncher replied. He said, his gimmick may be somewhat weird, but I really don't think another homophobic threat is called for, do you? I'm sure you could think of something better to contribute. A user, interestingly named Lagana, then posted, well, the pure number of homophobes on RSPW is really sad. The Dustin gimmick is a mix between Adrian Street and Gorgeous George, but hey, I forgot you guys are selling out every major arena in the world, so you know what sells and what doesn't. No idea if that's the Dave Lagana, but I suppose anything's possible. There were a lot of people lurking on RSPW back then. August 20th, Jake Harrison. Title of the thread, My Goldust Thoughts. He actually doesn't look gay at all to me. He looks more like a cross between a Mortal Kombat villain and a Champions of the Galaxy character. For all you Champions of the Galaxy players out there, does Goldust not look an awful lot like Killer Queen? I have no idea what this person is talking about, but perhaps some of you do. Joseph says, I didn't think Killer Queen at all. More like Adrian Street and Rocky from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. We skip to August 30th and a post titled The Latest Tapings by a lady named Melina. I recently attended SummerSlam, the Raw tapings in Canton, and the tapings in Erie that will cover most of the next few weeks. Goldust came out in a long gold robe with feathers to Ric Flair's WWF music. Needless to say, some of us were not too happy with Goldust's entrance, plus the fact that some of the things he did in the ring with Razor Ramon were just plain pornographic. Well, see, I had no idea that Ric Flair ever used, or Goldust ever used Ric Flair's WWF music. This is the first I'm actually reading about this. This I need to see. See, this is the sort of thing that the Hidden Gem section on the network was created for. I feel like it was created for things like this. So people were asking, you know, did he take the wig off? Did he wrestle with the wig? Did he take it off? Peter Cook responds, I doubt he took off the wig. This doesn't bode well for Dustin. I wonder what the heck he did to Razor. I wonder if I even want to know. And Peter's signature on the bottom reads as follows. It says, Republican, Blue Steel drummer, Sega Saturn owner, Iron Maiden, and wrestling fan. So there's Peter Cook in a nutshell. On September 12th, a user named Shampoo posted a thread. There's something I'll bet some of these people never used a day in their lives. He says, Goldust Heat Magnet is the title of the thread. I've only recently returned to RSPW after a summer break, and it seems the current target of choice has been Goldust / Dustin Rhodes. Now, I admit that the bodysuit and face paint combo is not the greatest gimmick for a grappler of his great talent. But believe me, it does work. I went to a house show in Niagara Falls, New York on August 30th to discover that Goldust was on the card. Mind you, I, along with most everybody else in the convention center, had no idea that Dustin was beneath the paint, but I was interested to see what was in store. His opponent was the Dumpster, and as the designated jobber to the stars, Duke entered the ring first. When Dustin began to walk down the aisle, the place went nuts, and he was milking the gimmick for all it was worth. He even had white feather edging to his robe. He entered the ring, preened for the crowd, and then pulled off his wig. Dead silence, followed by an even greater pop once people began to recognize him. The match itself was okay, with Rhodes winning with a submission move. Rhodes was quite over with the crowd. By the way, was this really his first match under Goldust? It was billed as such, but I don't know what the WWF taping schedule is like. This match would have been the Wednesday after SummerSlam. Jeremy replies, says it seems a lot of people here dislike this character. He is called all sorts of homophobic names. I ask you, though, to remember one thing. Goldust, a man who wears a long blonde wig, body glitter, lipstick, and eyeshadow, is married to Alexandra York. Go figure. Alexandra York, of course, being Marlena. Donald chimes in. You'll probably see Goldie take out the male creature of the night as a prelude to a pay-per-view coffin match with The Undertaker. I'd have to put my money on Goldust to get the reputation as the man who destroyed The Undertaker once and for all. Oh, Donald. I hope Donald doesn't bet on the horses with predictions like that. Goldust as the man to end The Undertaker once and for all. In 1995. Amazing. We skip ahead a few months to November 19th, the day of the Survivor Series. I remember that show very well. It was the Survivor Series. I think it was the US Air Arena in Landover, Maryland. Bret Hart and Diesel in the main event. The wild card match. Funny, you know, all the hatred in my heart these last few weeks for this stupid wild card rule on Raw. But there was a time where I actually was a huge wild card fan. I actually really liked the wild card match. that Gorilla Monsoon put together at the Survivor Series that year. It was just a random mixing of heels and babyfaces teaming together. So, November 19th, and on that Survivor Series show, Goldust wrestled Bam Bam Bigelow. It's a post started by Bryant Farley called Goldust, Wear a Cup, Please. Is it just me, or was Dustin not wearing any protection at all at Survivor Series tonight? Maybe butt floss, but no cup, as his unit seemed pretty prominent tonight. Or maybe he was cold. Wait, hold on a second. Back up a little bit. I'm still stuck on this butt floss thing. I've never heard of that before. I've never heard that expression used before. Butt floss? That sounds painful. Flossing your butt does not sound like an activity that I would ever care to partake in. Bryant continues. Any guys, please respond, as my boyfriend thinks I'm nuts. I thought it was Mabel who works stiff in the WWF. Boy, we got a whole community full of comedians here. Someone else suggested that since it was his first pay-per-view, which it wasn't, by the way, it was not Goldust's first pay-per-view, he debuted it in your house. But he said since it was his first pay-per-view, maybe he was overexcited. That's what one other person thought. Maybe that was what was going on here at this pay-per-view. Yeah, because, you know, every Halloween I get excited. And, yeah, it's my favorite holiday. As you guys well know, Halloween is my favorite holiday. That doesn't mean I walk around the entire month of October with a raging boner because of it. I'm not buying that excuse. Mike says, nope, several people at the show noticed Goldust was kind of sticking out. That outfit of his is so damn skin tight that you can see everything. My girlfriend pointed out that you could see his love handles as well. I think Vinny is just trying to add to the disgust that the fans have when they see him. We have Dan, says, love handles is the exact same phrase my friend's wife used to comment on the extra dusty fat. And we all notice Goldilocks' little bear as well. If Vince is trying to add to the disgust that fans feel when they see him, it works. I thought that you would be enlightened by a thread about Goldust boner sticking out of his costume here in 1995. These people, by the way, are not wrong. I noticed it too back then. It was impossible not to. Thankfully, he got rid of those skin-tight outfits, but it took a few months. It took a while before he finally wore something that was a little bit looser. And we'll end with this. This is not a Goldust thread per se, but this made me laugh out loud when I read the first reply. 1 year later, on November 6, 1996, a user named The Masked Canuck, he reached his boiling point with WWF programming, and he started a thread titled, WWF Gets One More Chance. Tell me if this doesn't sound like the sort of thing you would read in every Facebook group today. After last Monday's Raw, I have decided that if WWF plans to continually broadcast garbage, I will stop watching their shows altogether. Brian Pillman takes out a gun. Nice message you're sending to the kids, Vince. And I did see that Goldust kissed Barry Windham during their match. That's absolutely disgusting, and it has no place in the squared circle. Last chance. So that was from the Masked Canuck. He's putting WWF on notice. Well, this is what the Bang Bang Kid had to say in response to the Masked Canuck. I heard on a hotline that McMahon called his bookers in for an emergency round-the-clock brainstorming session last night. It seems everyone was called in to find ways to appease the Masked Canuck, who has given Titan notice that he may soon not like them anymore. I don't know why I find that so funny. Reportedly, the phrase, rat's ass, came up repeatedly during the discussion of the Canuck situation. Yeah, I wonder if that was on Mean Gene's hotline. Oh my goodness. Fireball says, you know, after seeing this type of message for the nth time, I can honestly say that a good chunk of the RSPW users don't know what the fuck they want in life. We bitch and complain that wrestling is geared towards kids and how it sucks. And then the feds try... I assume he means the wrestling promotions, not the FBI. The feds try to come up with hardcore angles, and we complain about how this will affect the kids. So that was a message from Fireball. This has been your weekly reminder that almost 25 years later, wrestling fans still don't know what the hell they want. Let's take a few mailbag questions before we get to the Rey Mysterio countdown. We are up to number 3 this week. But you can send in your questions to me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. That will always help your chances of your question being read on the show. Callum, in Gravesend, Kent, in England. There can be only one obvious winner between The Fiend and Seth Rollins at Hell in a Cell, and that's The Fiend. We've now seen Brock Lesnar challenge Kofi Kingston for the WWE title on SmackDown. If I'm not mistaken, Survivor Series is the next pay-per-view after Hell in a Cell, and they love to do these champion versus champion matches, so there is a very strong possibility that we could see The Fiend take on Brock Lesnar. If I'm booking it, I'm booking The Fiend to put down Brock. How would you book that match? I wouldn't. I wouldn't even do the champion against champion thing this year. Because I cannot see them putting The Fiend over Brock Lesnar. If you think he's going to stick his fingers in his mouth and just put him down like everybody else, then you have not been paying attention, my friend. I'm not saying that you think that will actually happen. I know. Look, I agree with you in that if they did the match, I would love to see him put down Brock. Absolutely. Brock has gotten 2 wins in these champion against champion Raw vs. SmackDown matches in recent years. He has beaten Daniel Bryan and he has beaten AJ Styles. And both of them were very good. They were actually excellent. They were excellent matches. So I'm not complaining about the matches. But Brock won both matches. And I'm not even sure that going in, it was ever really in doubt. So it would be a nice change of pace here. And it would certainly give a nice rub to Bray Wyatt if he was to go in there and actually beat Brock. And Brock actually lost one of these matches. Not lose his title, because it's never a championship match, but lose the match. So I agree with you in that respect. I would do the same thing also. But they'll never do it. They'll never do it. So I wouldn't even book the match. You know, you have one big Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series elimination match. You know, years ago, I pitched War Games at Survivor Series. I thought the names fit like a glove. War Games at Survivor Series. And so in place of the traditional elimination matches, or maybe in addition to it, you would build to this big brand battle inside War Games, inside the two rings. And then they gave War Games to, you know, NXT took War Games instead, which is great. At least we got some version of War Games. But I still say it was a missed opportunity to not make that a new tradition at Survivor Series. So you can still do Raw versus SmackDown 5-on-5 elimination rules and not do any other Raw versus SmackDown matches. Just, you know, you can do that one match for brand supremacy or bragging rights or whatever you want to call it without having to stall all of your existing storylines for an entire month where it's like, okay, we're going to put all this on hold because we have to do Raw versus SmackDown, which never means a damn thing anyway. And you're having this draft where you really want to, supposedly, you're going to get rid of the wild card rule. You want people to really believe that this is going to be a hard split between the two brands. And you're going to turn around a month later and have an entire pay-per-view dedicated to Raw versus SmackDown. I mean, am I not the only one who realizes how stupid this is? If you just kept it to one big Survivor Series match, that would be fine. So I wouldn't even do the whole champion against champion thing. Blake, from Georgia, I was thinking about The Fiend's attack on Kane on Raw, and I believe this is setting up for The Undertaker to show up at Hell in a Cell, causing a no contest in the Universal title match and setting up Undertaker against The Fiend for Survivor Series. If that happens and Brock does in fact win the title from Kofi, will they go back to Rollins against Lesnar at SummerSlam, at Survivor Series, and Lesnar gets his win back? We'd love to hear your thoughts on potential Survivor Series, WWE versus Universal title matches. Well, again, it's just what I just said. I mean, I would not do champion against champion this year. I would just stay away from it. You want maybe go back to it next year. But I would stay away from it this year. I don't think it's necessary. Undertaker getting revenge for Kane, I mean, I guess that could work. It's a bit of a stretch, because why would he really even give a shit? But you could explain it that way. You know, it's his brother and all that. But I still say it would have made a lot more sense to have The Fiend attack Undertaker. You want to do a match between them, give The Undertaker a reason to want to go after Bray Wyatt and have a match with him. Undertaker was announced as appearing at Madison Square Garden for SmackDown. He had no role. They ended up feeding Sami Zayn to him for a chokeslam. That was more important than running an angle where the Fiend would have attacked him and then he could have disappeared for a few weeks. And yes, if you don't want to put the championship on Bray, first of all, don't put him in the fucking match at Hell in a Cell. But if you don't want to put the title on him, then yes, you could have then had the Undertaker, you know, the lights go out and, you know, he's a magic man just like the Fiend is, and he somehow costs him the match without Wyatt having to take a pinfall. And it builds to an Undertaker-Bray Wyatt match at Survivor Series where Wyatt gets his win back for WrestleMania 31. You could have done that. That would have made a lot more sense. But they didn't do it. So I don't think we are going to see the Undertaker involved here, because I think they missed their chance. I think that was the time to do it. Christina in Glendale, Arizona. Chris Benoit's son, David, was on Darren Young's podcast this week talking about wanting to go to AEW and claiming that WWE no longer allows him to visit backstage at their shows. He has been banned. Do you think he should get the chance to wrestle somewhere, or is the Benoit name far too toxic? You know, it's a tough deal for this kid. What is he in? He's got to be mid-20s by now, right? Mid to late 20s. You know, he should not have to pay for the sins of his father. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not fair at all. He is not responsible for what his father did. But even if he were to sign with a company and they said, look, we want to change your name. We're going to get away from the Benoit name. We're going to call you, David Dexter, David Duke, or something like that. But not David Benoit, okay? We're going to get away from the Benoit name. Even if they did that, he looks just like him. I mean, he is a spitting image of Chris Benoit. You cannot look at this kid and not think of Chris Benoit. It is impossible. Impossible. And so I think if you're like a WWE, you could forget having a career there. Because the last thing they want to do is dredge up memories of Chris Benoit. Him being banned from visiting backstage, I mean, that's what he claims. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. That's what he says. I know when, you know, there were pictures online of when he last visited. He was visiting backstage in March of this year. Took a picture, took like a selfie with Natty. He was wearing an AEW logo jacket. Whether that had anything to do with him being banned, I mean, I can't think that had anything to do with him being banned. It wasn't like he went on TV with it. I mean, who gives a shit what jacket he's wearing? But who knows? I mean, maybe he was saying things or doing things backstage that, you know, led them to say, listen, you're not welcome here anymore. I don't know. We don't have all the facts on that. I'm sure there's more to it than that. But it's a hard thing, you know. Do I think he deserves an opportunity? Look, I don't know if he's any good. I know he trained for a while with Lance Storm. They asked him, what have you been doing? Have you been actively training recently? He said he's been messing around with some guys from AEW. I mean, what does that mean? He's been messing around? I mean, is he rolling in the gym? Is he doing actual wrestling training? I have no idea. I've never seen him wrestle a match before. So I have no idea if he's actually any good at this. I mean, you would think it would be hard not to be if you're the son of Chris Benoit, but yeah, it doesn't always work that way. Genetically, not all of that talent is always transferred down to the next generation. I think that if he wants to wrestle, he should have the ability and the opportunity, even if it's just indies, to go out there and work wrestling. But I don't ever see WWE signing him. Now, AEW, where their head is at, I think they'd be open to him if he was any good. I saw Tony Khan was posing for a photo with him recently. Yeah, it's a tough situation. It's a very unique situation. He should absolutely not be responsible or punished in any way for what his father did. That's not fair. But you look at him, and it is what it is. And I could totally understand WWE not wanting to do anything with him. Yeah, you know, just being respectful about it and passing on the opportunity. But he should be able to go somewhere else, hopefully, you know, even if it is just independent promotions. And if he wants to wrestle, maybe if he starts wrestling and he's putting on these great matches, that's the best way to get noticed. I mean, if he's serious about training and if he's any good at it, if he's anything like his father used to be in the ring, that I think will get the attention of some important people. And maybe one day he could be in an AEW. But We haven't seen him wrestle a single match yet. He wants to go to AEW. I'm sure a lot of people want to go to AEW. AEW just got a big cable deal on TNT. They're going to have an audience of, you know, I mean, who knows what the audience will end up being, but they'll have millions of people potentially who have access to this TV network who can watch them. Believe me, I'm sure there's a lot of aspiring professional wrestlers out there who would love to do something with AEW. Just because his last name is Benoit does not mean he gets any preferential treatment, but I do think he deserves a fair shake. We'll take two more here. Jerome in Sin City, USA. Which feud would have been better had it happened in WWE? Bret Hart against Hulk Hogan or Bret Hart against the Ultimate Warrior? This includes promos as well as the match itself. I gotta go Bret and Hogan. It was a real missed opportunity in 93. Bret and Warrior, you know what? I know Bret in his book, I think, talked about how he was told that Warrior, he was going to wrestle him at the Royal Rumble or something like that. And the Warrior was going to lose to him or drop the championship to him, something like that. You know, I like Bret. And maybe Bret really was told that. Maybe he was fed bullshit from somebody behind the scenes in WWE or even Vince himself. I'm sure Vince shoveled plenty of bullshit into people's mouths over the years. And Pritchard and all of them. Maybe he really was told that. Never in a million years could I ever envision them going ahead with a Bret Hart Ultimate Warrior match, program, or anything like that. Not a chance. So forget that. And that would have been a total mismatch anyway. There's no way the Warrior would have gone out of his way to work with Bret and make him look good. I don't see it. Bret and Hogan. Now look, Hogan, I'm sure, would have had his own agenda by his own admission. He looked out for himself a lot over the course of his career. That's why he was able to stay on top as long as he was able to stay on top. Bret and Hogan was clearly a direction that they were going to go in 93. I mean, they were even in the magazine. They would do, you know, fantasy warfare matchups between them. It seemed like the logical place to go. And Hogan left. Didn't want to work with Bret. He dropped it to Yokozuna because Yokozuna was a big guy. So I'll lose the championship to him. And it never happened. But I think sometimes, you know, what if the match did happen? What would the crowd reaction have been? Right? You can look at Bret and Luger in 94. Luger was sort of the chosen one. And the fans had a different choice. They went with Bret. And to the company's credit, they went in that direction. They actually listened to the fans. They can read the tea leaves, and they saw that the people really liked Bret Hart, and they liked him a lot more than Lex Luger. I wonder if it would have been a similar situation here. If people were sick of Hogan, and when in a situation where he was face-to-face with another babyface, as beloved as Bret was, would there have been a split reaction? Would it have been primarily cheers for Bret and boos for Hogan? Maybe it would have been the opposite. Maybe it would have been cheers for Hogan and boos for Bret. Maybe the fans wouldn't have seen Bret as being on the same level. It's one of those what-if questions we'll never know the answer to. But I think Bret and Hogan as a main event at SummerSlam in 93 would have been a fascinating match. I mean, just the whole babyface against babyface dynamic, two totally different styles, two different sizes. Hogan, even Hogan then, who looked like he was deflated, like somebody stuck a pin in him and he popped, was still bigger than Bret Hart. It would have been a very interesting match. What would I have done? I would have convinced Hogan to do the right thing. I would have convinced Hogan to do the job for Bret. Right in the middle of the ring. And not even necessarily tapping out to the sharpshooter, because Bret won a lot of his matches without using the sharpshooter. So maybe to save face, he's got Hogan in the sharpshooter in the middle of the ring, and Hogan manages to power out of it, where he reaches the ropes. And it could have been a deal where maybe he misses the leg drop and then Bret, you know, cradles him. Or we've seen some pretty clever finishes in Bret matches over the years. You know, the whole victory roll into a roll up against Bam Bam. You know, the match with Bulldog, Bret lost that one. But even that was, you know, not a traditional finish. So I would have been interested to see what Bret could come up with in a match like that. You know, and Hogan could have played it off the way he played it off with Warrior at WrestleMania 6. He kicks out a second after the three count. You know, kind of like, you beat me, but you didn't really beat me kind of thing. But then he hands the belt to Bret, shakes his hand, and passes the torch. That would have been a huge moment in Bret's career. Now, he ended up having a fine career anyway. He won the championship the following year at WrestleMania. But that would have been a huge moment. And Hogan would not have lost anything for it. That's the thing that it's just, I mean, look, I guess you got to be in that person's shoes to see what the hell's going through their mind at the time. Maybe he thought doing that would lessen his value elsewhere if he wanted to go back to New Japan or something. I don't know, but it's not as though Hogan losing to Bret in a situation like that would have devalued him at all. He still would have been the biggest star in the company and the biggest star in the business, and he could have gone out and made a ton of money somewhere else. But that just wasn't his thought process at the time. But that was the match I would prefer to see. And Anthony in Philly, buy or sell on what you consider to be the more brutal match of Mick Foley's WWF career. Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker or his I Quit match against The Rock? I'm going to buy on Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker. I mean, this guy got thrown off the top of the cell twice. 16 feet each. That's a combined 32 feet. He got thrown off that cell. And it's not as though, well, you know, there's a crash pad down below. That second fall was worse than the first. He said he described it as being in a car crash. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it killed a lot of brain cells. But you gotta look beyond just the bumps off the cage. You know, this guy, he had thumbtacks stuck in his body, you know, his tooth was knocked through his lip, and I mean, he took a lot of shit. He took a lot of abuse in that match. I mean, the I Quit match was no fun either. You know, that many chair shots to the head. But you can't tell me that was more brutal than what he went through in that Hell in a Cell match. We are counting down the 8 best matches in the career of Rey Mysterio on our way to Sound Off 619, which is 1 week away. Next week, we are going to reveal number 2 and number 1, but to get to number 2, we first have to get through number 3. And I teased this match in the mailbag a few weeks ago. I know if some people picked up on it when I was talking about some of the greatest Intercontinental Championship matches of all time. Chris Jericho is in the middle of his next, I guess you'd say, phase right now of his career. He's had a lot of phases, Jericho has. Lionheart in ECW and WCW. Conspiracy Theory Jericho with Ralphus. Y2J Chris Jericho. Undisputed Champion Jericho. Jericho and Christian as a tag team. You know, Serious Jericho who wore suits on TV every week. And had that great feud with Shawn Michaels. Jericho, the legend hater, feuding with the likes of Ricky Steamboat and Mickey Rourke. And being mocked on TV by Bob Barker. I could go on and on, right? The list Jericho and his friendship with Kevin Owens. The Jericho who became basically like a Bruiser Brody style brawler in New Japan. Brawling Jericho. Now Jericho, the bubbly drinking AEW champion. He's had quite the Hall of Fame career. But I don't know that he has had a better period than the period from 2008 to 2009, which saw him have that all-time great feud with Shawn Michaels that played out over a six-month period. He won the world title during that time. He got a pay-per-view match with Ricky Steamboat, which for him might have been like a bucket list thing. And then he won the Intercontinental Championship during another tremendous feud against Rey Mysterio. And he won the tag team titles with Big Show. And Jericho is still a guilty pleasure of mine. You know, I'm not always a fan of these makeshift tag teams, but Jericho was damn good. Just objectively, a very good team. The feud with Jericho and Mysterio kicked off after Jericho was drafted to SmackDown, which was after WrestleMania 25, and after the Steamboat match at Backlash. So, WrestleMania comes and goes. Jericho beats Ricky Steamboat. SmackDown was in Madison Square Garden on the night that Jericho debuted on the SmackDown brand. He was included that night in a fatal four-way against Mysterio, Kane, and Jeff Hardy to determine a number one contender for Edge's World Heavyweight title. Jericho threw a chair at Rey's face. He was disqualified. Jeff Hardy would go on to pin Mysterio and win the match. And thus, a feud was born. A feud where Jericho became absolutely obsessed over Rey Mysterio's mask and wanting to unmask him for all the world to see. This almost didn't even happen. This entire feud nearly did not happen. According to Jericho, Vince McMahon was not on board with the idea because he just didn't think anybody would want to see an angle built around a mask. He didn't see what the big deal was. It's like, so what? Jericho had to explain to him why the mask meant so much in Lucha Libre, and he had to explain to him in a way that he knew would resonate with Vince McMahon. Because, you know, a guy like Jericho, who's been working for that company since 99, you know, he's one of those people who I'm sure has his personal relationship with Vince McMahon, and he talks about how sometimes they would text each other. I mean, maybe not now, but they had that kind of relationship. And he would have to know, you know, how to pick and choose his battles behind the scenes, how to talk to Vince. You'll learn how to communicate with him, how to speak to him. So he knew that he had to explain it to him in a way that was going to really resonate. So he explained it like this. He said, look, I'm a bully. And for the first time in my career, I'm bigger than somebody. I'm bigger than Rey Mysterio. And I'm going to walk into this kid's class if he was a student in school. I'm going to walk into this kid's class and I'm going to steal his milk money. And I'm going to take that money and I'm going to throw it in the garbage because I can. I don't care about the milk money. I just don't want him to have it. So I'm going to take it from him because that's what bullies do. Basically, I don't give a shit about the mask or him showing his face. It doesn't matter to me. I just want the mask because I don't want him to have it anymore. And at that point, Vince understood, and he was totally on board with the angle. Jericho sold him on it. Jericho wanted to expose Mysterio as a fraud, and he thought the mask symbolized that lie and the fraud that he thought Rey stood for. So there was one episode of SmackDown in the build-up to their one of their matches. As Rey is walking down the aisle, you know, he would do that thing, the head-to-head, mask-to-mask thing. He put his head up against the young fan who was also wearing a mask. So he's doing that deal, and he's doing it with what he thought was a young fan. He turns to walk away, and the fan attacks him, and it turned out to be Chris Jericho. So they had their first match at Judgment Day. Mysterio pinned Jericho to retain the IC title. At Extreme Rules, Jericho beat Mysterio. It was a no-holds-barred match. Jericho became a 9-time Intercontinental Champion. Rey was in the middle of a 619 when Jericho swiped the mask right off his head, exposed his face. Rey quickly covered his face, put his head in his hands, I guess terrified that he would be outed as a member of the Filthy Animals in WCW. Jericho schoolboyed him, won the title, and he had the title in one hand, he had Rey's mask in the other. It was like a trophy for him. Which leads us to the rubber match at what used to be called the Great American Bash. Now it was, by this point, it was reduced simply to The Bash. I have the honor of having been in attendance for the very last Great American Bash pay-per-view, which was the year before this. Number 3 in the countdown of the best Rey Mysterio matches of all time is Rey Mysterio against Chris Jericho, mask versus title, at The Bash in 2009. This was the best of their series of matches, I thought. Each one was better than the one that came before it. I had so much fun going back and watching this again. I knew this match was going to be on my list. When I made the initial list, and there were a lot more than 8 matches on that initial list, and I had to figure out which ones were going to be cut. But I knew this match would be on here. I just wasn't sure where to rank it. I didn't know where in the top 8 was it going to rank. Was it going to be number 3? Was it going to be number 6? I wasn't sure. Top 3, once I went through everything, top 3 just felt right. We had the odd and very short-lived announced team of Todd Grisham and Jim Ross representing SmackDown. Right from the outset, Jericho went straight for the mask. There was a springboard slingshot moonsault in here by Mysterio. There was a Rana attempt off the top that Jericho turned into a powerbomb. So some pretty big moves here in this match. There were a lot of moves that called back to their earlier matches. And then one of the best damn code breakers that you will ever see. Rey springboards off the rope. Rey hits the ropes. He springboards off the ropes and turns around right into a code breaker. This was a thing of beauty. But Jericho took his time crawling over to make the cover, and Ray kicked out. Ray finally hits the 619, springboard off the ropes, but Jericho turns it into the walls. The crowd was coming unglued for this. One of the things, when you go back and watch this match, and I hope a lot of you are doing that as I go along here in the countdown, because it is pretty fun to go back. Pay attention to the crowd reaction, especially as the match goes on. And when they start reaching kind of the climax of that finishing sequence, the last few minutes of the match, and just how loud and how energetic and into this match these people are. When he put him in the walls, there were parts of this match where the hard cam was shaking. The building was shaking just enough where the hard camera was shaking a little bit, if you watch closely. Jericho did the same thing he did in their Extreme Rules match. He pulled the mask off of Ray's head, but Ray came prepared with a second mask. He was wearing a second mask underneath that one. 619, springboard splash, and Rey Mysterio regains the Intercontinental Championship. Tremendous stuff. Tremendous stuff. When the match ended, because I brought it up on the network with the pay-per-view, when the match ended, they were showing highlights of Donald Trump buying Monday Night Raw. And now, as I sit here 10 years later, I'm just reminded of how fucking weird this world really is. Like, where are we? Oh, this would not be the last that we would see of Chris Jericho on this pay-per-view. He came back out a few matches later to team with Edge as a surprise entry in the Unified Tag Team title match against Legacy and the Colognes. Jericho and Edge won the titles, and 5 days later, in a match against Jeff Hardy at a live event, Edge, early in the match, did a simple leapfrog, and when he landed, he tore his Achilles, and he was gone for 6 months. But out of that came Jericho, Big Show and Chris Jericho, so at least something good came out of it. You know, were it not for the classic between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania that year, this would have been my match of the year for 2009. I know Jeff Hardy and CM Punk had a great TLC match at SummerSlam. Even John Cena and Randy Orton. You know, I joked over the years on this show about how sick to death I am of seeing these two against each other. Because they just had so many freaking matches. And not all of them have been that good either. But two of their best matches came back to back in 2009. I was a big fan of the match they had at that Breaking Point pay-per-view. They had an I Quit match. You know, that was the match where Orton cuffed or whatever, tied Cena to the ring post outside and was whacking him with the kendo stick. And then Cena used the kendo stick on Orton's face while he was in the STF to tap him out. So I thought that they had a great match at Breaking Point, which was actually the name of a pay-per-view. It lasted all of 1 year, but that was a great match. And even their Iron Man match. You would think, oh my God, 60 minutes of John Cena and Randy Orton. I was actually a pretty big fan of their Iron Man match. I thought it was very good. I remember liking that one too. But none of these matches were as good as the match here between Jericho and Mysterio. So it all comes down to next week. Episode 619 of The Sound Off will be the end of our countdown featuring the top two greatest matches in Rey Mysterio's career. Good luck with the guesses. Okay, I gotta get out of here. I have another local TV station coming to my house for an interview about my mother's book. This is my second one this week. It's almost like I chose the right career, working in PR. Except normally I'm the one pitching other people's stories and not my own. Speaking of my mom's book, one of my international listeners reminded me to mention the fact that The Adventure of Hardy the Horse is not just available on Amazon in the US. It is available on Amazon UK. So if you live in that part of the world, if you live in the UK, you can purchase it through Amazon UK. And if you do purchase a copy, please do leave a review after you receive it. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel. Anytime new content goes up there, I hope you guys are getting notifications. I know in the past some people complain they don't get notifications. It's a YouTube issue. I hope that's been resolved. I know YouTube's had some problems of their own they've been dealing with. But you will be notified when new content hits the channel, including live streams. You get a neat little email saying that I am now live, in case you're not aware of it. So go to Solomonster Sounds Off on YouTube. Please hit the sub button. I will be back next week. That is Sunday, September 29th, for episode 619 of The Sound Off. We wrap up the Mysterio countdown and cover all the news of the week. Until then, be well, stay safe, Have yourselves a great first week of fall. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off and for 619 next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Roman referred to himself as, quote, the best performance fighter alive. Performance fighter? Holy shit. Is everybody not named Dolph Ziggler in that company afraid to just call themselves professional wrestlers? Do they have an allergic reaction if they refer to themselves as a professional wrestler? Does their throat close up? Do their eyes swell shut? Do they have to have an EpiPen stuck in their leg? I mean, I don't understand this. I wonder if there is any other industry in the world where people willingly sign up, but they're afraid to actually admit what they do. Porn. That's the closest thing I could think of. Porn.
The Sala Monster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter @SalaMonster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Sala Monster Sounds Off.